of Superior, Illinois.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 30th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can call in. Our number is 605-475-3250. Our access code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you could send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find them on the right-hand side, banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be in Matthew. We're in chapter 26. Last time we were reading about the betrayal of Jesus. We're going to be picking up in verse 69, I think it is. Hang on. Verse 26. Yep, 69. So we'll pick up 69. Not sure how many verses we're going to read, but we'll read a few verses anyway. Okay. Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, Thou also was with Jesus of Galilee. But he, Peter, denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him and said unto them that were there, this fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came on, hang on a minute. Got some sounds coming through. And after a while came unto him they that stood by and said to Peter, surely thou art one of them, for thy speech betrayeth thee. Then began he to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Jesus remembered the words of Jesus, which said unto him, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went out and wept bitterly. Now when the morning was come, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. And Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what is that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. And the chief priest took the pieces of silver and said, it is not lawful for us to put them into the treasury, because it is the price of blood. And they took counsel and brought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Wherefore that field was called the field of blood unto this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, and they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value, and did give for the potter's field, as the Lord appointed me. Okay, we'll stop there. That's in verse 10, and we'll pick up the rest next week in verse 11. Okay, let's see. I don't think I was here last week. I think Gerard was running things last week, and I don't know if he spoke about the writs of errors that we put up into the federal court up there in Albany on the Second Amendment that we have. The Second Amendment in the federal court case we have going up there in Albany. And if you haven't read it, you might want to go up to the website to read it. I'm sure we put out an email on it. You can go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight the grand jury or reality check. You'll find it under both of those tabs. And just click on the Second Amendment or Amendment 2. And come down and you can read the three writs of errors. There were very important writs. People need to understand those writs and what we use them for. One of them was to bring the court back into a common law jurisdiction because the paperwork that we used in order to file into the court, they kind of boxed us in. So when you fill out that paperwork, it's a civil cover sheet. Also on the summons, it's a civil court summons. And that civil means statutory, and that brings us under the statutory process. And so since that was the last filing of a paper as far as claiming of jurisdiction, then our jurisdiction would have been moved back into the statutory side, to the civil side. So we gave a writ of error commanding that the judge order the clerk to make the changes accordingly. And I believe we gave him 7 days to do that. There was also another writ of error that you might want to read on where the judge gave some approval to the other side for some more time without talking with us about it to begin with. We searched all the rules, and there's no place where the judge can give anyone more time to answer. The law is clear. They must answer in 20 or 30 days. In this case, it's 30 days. 20 days if they were served personally, and 30 days if a doorkeeper took the paperwork. For U.S. Officers, you know, U.S. attorney or anybody that's that is hired by the United States government, they get 60 days in a federal court to respond. But these people are in the state, and they get 30. So anyway, the court did not have the authority to give an additional 45 days they asked for. So we made it clear that we're not going to accept that. If they had good reason, of course, it would be understandable. But they didn't even give a reason. They just wanted that 45 days, and they said they're going to try to file for a dismissal. So we're going to beat that out at the punch, so to speak. We're going to deal with that. And we will find them in default if they do not respond in the 30 days. We might give them an additional five to 7 days that they did lose from talking and dealing with the judge through a letter to try to get more time. There was a third error that we put in. I'm trying to think what the third error was. Let's see. One was for the correcting the jurisdiction. Oh, the other one was for paying to come into the court. You know, we had to pay $400. I think it was $400 even. And we want our money back because that was fraud for them to charge us to come into a court of justice. With those civil papers sitting there, I guess they feel they can get away with it. But now that we've taken and removed those civil papers through a writ of error and a command to show cause or make that change, that kind of brings us back into the jurisdiction of the common law. And they have to respond accordingly. But anyway, their deadline on those two were 7 days, and that should be up tomorrow. And we'll give them an extra day or two grace and see if they respond, and then we'll see what paperwork we'll file then. We'll go from there. Okay, let's see what else we have here. I guess that's it for right now. Jen, do we have any questions or anything, or anybody else needs to make any announcements?
Yes, I have a number of questions tonight. You'll have to pay close attention to a couple of these because they're long before they get to the question. Let me start. In regards to the New York SAFE Act, you have mentioned on the Monday night calls that National Liberty Alliance plans to extend its assistance to surrounding states in regard to Second Amendment liberties. Here in Pennsylvania, we have requirements on private sales of handguns to undergo transfers through the FFL dealer, whereas we do not for rifles and shotguns. Upon deeper research into these laws, I find that they are replete with statutory language, something contrary to the common law. Can National Liberty address the issues of our state as it pursuing, not quite grammatically correct, but pursuing judicial action on the New York State SAFE Act? Also, could you please give your community, or commentary, excuse me, as a whole, the U.S. laws regarding the Second Amendment, such as the Gun Control Act of 1968 and the National Firearms Act of 1934. To me, these all infringe on the Second Amendment.
Right. Yeah, well, they're all null and void. The federal judiciary has felt safer and safer to move on, and so has the states, even quicker than the federal, because the state judges... most of them are not very highly educated, and so they don't seem to be too frightened, and they have no knowledge of the common law at all. I mean, it would be rare to go in and get a judge on the state level that understands the common law and understands the situation and what's really going on. On the federal level, It's different. These guys are much more highly educated. They understand how this whole process took place. They understand the Organic Act of 1871 and some of the other things that took place prior to that to prepare until they eventually got into the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment for getting rid of the state's powers and ability to have a vote in Congress. That's why they moved the senators out and gave them to the people. People already had the representation. But anyway, that and the 14th Amendment, which they feel pretty strong, really focuses in on civil rights. And that's the key. If you really pay attention to everything they're talking about, they talk about civil rights. We talk about unalienable rights. Whenever you're in a court and you're talking, you need to be talking about unalienable rights. You need to always be keeping your jurisdiction. If you use the word civil rights in a court, then you just change the jurisdiction for that conversation, and maybe permanently for your case, and they will probably try to press that way. That's why you got to be very careful in what you say in a court when you move in a court, and if you say something that changes your jurisdiction, all of a sudden you are in a different jurisdiction, and you've given acknowledgement of that by the words that you spoke. So we do have to be very careful. The other thing is they feel very, very comfortable in the fact of the idea that the civil paper, the cover sheet, the civil cover sheet, in order to file a court case, you have to fill out the cover sheet. There is absolutely no place on that cover sheet where you can pursue and push it towards the Constitution and an Article 3 court. They do have a box where you can check for a jury if you want a jury, but that's definitely not a common law jury. If you read the rules of, not the rules, the or maybe it is the rules. I forget what it's called. Maybe it's the rule book for the grand jury or the trial juries. And it's a book about the process. And really, it violates the common law jury. Ultimately, what it does is it prepares them for stacking the jury. Also, there's a questionnaire that is asked. And again, this is all for the purpose of stacking the jury in a statutory court. They'll want to know, do you listen to CNN or do you listen to Fox? I mean, which ones do you watch? They ask you a lot of personal questions that they have no business asking. But from the answers, they can kind of put you into a category and therefore put you in the right case so that they can get the results that they're looking for. So the whole thing is really devious. It's really criminal, in my opinion. Well, there's no doubt about it. It is criminal. So we have to get ourselves positioned in the proper court. So if you're going to go into a courtroom and make an argument, you have to make sure you're in the proper jurisdiction. Now, going back to the idea of these issues with the guns, we intend on doing our best to win. I do believe we can win in this court. They're going to try to throw us out. And that's what we have to defeat. And we're going to try to cut that off at the pass. And you'll see what we mean in the next paperwork we're about to put out. But again, we have to wait for their responses before we move to the next paperwork. But we're going to put them on notice and probably remove the judge and maybe even the magistrate that's on our case right now. And that should signal the next one that would be replacing them. So we'll see where that goes and how we're going to go with that. But that's really one of the moves we're going to take in order to maintain our jurisdiction and also prevent them from throwing us out of the court, because that's what they're going to try to do. We've been here before. We know how they play their handbook, so to speak. They must answer. The court rules is 100% clear. They must answer, and they must do it within the allotted time. Again, if on the other side, there's death in the family and you needed an extra 5 or 10 days or whatever the case may be, of course that's understood. They'll get it. But without a reason like something like that, they don't get their 10 days. They could ask us if we'd give them grace, In this case, we're not giving them any grace. They need to answer, and they need to respond. If they don't answer and respond to every single statement that we made in our paperwork, then they default in all of those areas, and then we will file for a summary judgment, which would be proper in the case at that point, because there'd be no reason to take it to trial, because they would have admitted to everything that we had wrote in concerning this trial in the Second Amendment. If we could win this case here in New York, we then could move it and go after the case nationally. To go nationally is going to take a lot more money, and that's a key thing here, because we have to notify every governor and every legislator, every state legislator. So there's two houses in every state. So right there's, 100 papers that we have to file. And then, of course, there's the governor, so that's another 50. So that's 150 papers to filing. It's a lot of work, a lot of printing, a lot of mailing, a lot of certifying. We probably need maybe about $10,000 to file that case and maintain the paperwork and pay all the necessary fees, which we would ask for the money back as we move through that process, just like we're doing in this case. And that may take a while, but when the money does, if we did get the money back, which we would think that we would, we'd start put that money back into NLA for the purpose of supporting the grand jury and whatever other costs for other cases. We should be suing the judiciary. I'd love to sue the judiciary. There's so much that is so fraudulent in the process and the procedures and the paperwork and everything they have done to prevent anyone from truly opening a court of record, from truly opening a court that is really an Article III court. You can succeed in opening that by following the procedures that we've done. And as a matter of fact, in the course that we're setting up now, we will be explaining how to do that process in the federal courts, which also, again, would be for the state courts also. But state courts are more problematic. There's more problems in there. This is an issue, of course. It's a constitutional issue. The proper jurisdiction is the federal court. So to win in one federal court here in New York, okay, should make it a lot easier to win back in the federal court in all the states. And of course, the decision could be used in any state. So we'll see where that goes as time goes on. But again, a lot of that going into the court is going to depend on money to be able to do that. Okay, did I answer the question, or is a part of it I missed, Jim?
I think the only thing you didn't comment on the Gun Control Act, but there...
Oh,
I
well, they're null and void. They're null and void. I agree.
Exactly.
Well, he made that decision,
that
or he or she, whoever wrote that letter, made that point, and so we agree with that point. Marbury versus Madison, anything repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. We need not talk about it. Same thing with all these gun control acts here in this state.
Okay, the next one. The state of Pennsylvania is introducing legislation that would require PA citizens to adopt the national ID, a.k.a. the real ID, lest we cannot enter a federal building such as a courthouse or a private facility such as an airport. I know that this contradicts our First Amendment freedom of travel. If we are faced with this reality in the future, how should we respond to this?
Well, the proper response is to deal with it before it happens. And again, that would be something that, if we were to participate in a lawsuit for that, we would do it under the name of the grand jury, doing it on behalf of the people. So the plaintiff, I guess you would call, is the grand jury on that case. But you want to go after that before it becomes law, before the legislators pursue. They constantly keep moving more and more and more. But we also have to understand something else. All these people doing all these things, it's really being moved and pushed by the powers that be, the New World Order, the people who are behind the deep state and who has control of our government. And we see what President Trump is doing, and, draining the swamp, exposing the evil. And, we're waiting very patiently day by day, looking for the opening of these sealed indictments, which we believe, of course, that a lot of people in government is going to be going down. That's going to rock the entire nation when that happens. It's going to put a chill in every judge, in every court, on the federal level and on every state throughout the United States. Right now, they're continuing as the status quo. They have not really backed off because of their ignorance and their self-deception. They haven't backed off. Now, the powers that be are probably telling the judges and all the other people to maintain them under the control. Don't worry about it. We got this under control. We got a plan, this, that, or the other thing. But I don't think so. They're just, you know, really reaching out for straws and trying to hope and pray that they can get this process and get back to control that they've been losing and put some kind of a, you know, really... some kind of a thing against Trump. You know, they're trying to say he's incapable of being president, and they're trying to go through this idea of trying to have him removed from office. And, you know, they're not going to succeed at that. But in any event, the judges really haven't got the message yet. The legislators haven't got the message yet. But when the fan gets hit, so to speak, and that's when these things are open, I think you're going to see a lot of changes everywhere. These judges are going to get very worried. And whatever's going through the court is going to start to get a little more clout and power on, you know, the side that's coming in looking for the justice. And I think justice is going to start to prevail. But we'll see how that goes. In any event, it's an uphill battle. We still have to battle. We still have to take it to the court. We have to fight it properly and see where we go with it. So that's about all we can do. Okay,
last one is really more of a comment than a question. It says, is it really possible to keep question and answer periods to an agreed upon time limit for all questioners? I hear questions, especially regarding non-judicial foreclosures, that I've been trying to comment on for at least 2 weeks. This is serious. One should obtain a storage facility to store all of your precious items that are within the home. There is a CJD date usually written by hand on the judge's orders. The court will fight back and forth with you until that date, and when that date comes, you will be evicted by force.
Hold it.
If
do we
others
have two
are
questions
allowed to ask
here?
Questions.
We got two questions going here now, right?
What's Jen? The first one then?
Well, it sounded like they wanted to talk about the time period. Can we agree on a time period? And then they went into another question. So let me respond to that part and then start back with the second part of the question. You know, well, I agree that we should try to cut down on how much time we give an individual. We'll do our best to do that. Usually I get a note from somebody telling me, you know, hey, you've been on for 15 minutes or 10 minutes with this person or something, okay? But depending on the subject matter, sometimes it's me that's taking a long time. You know, when they ask a question or make a comment or something and then I go on for a while, and I'm taking opportunity to make some points and teach something here. So that being the case, you know, it is what it is on that end. And then we want to give the person at least one time to follow up. But sometimes we do go too many times, and we just have to be reminded. And again, we do have some people in the background that is reminding us, so we'll do our best to keep it short. But again, if it is an important thing to talk about, if the subject matter is really ripe at the time, for the time, and we can use it as a teaching process, then we'll spend the time with that subject to do that for that purpose. Okay, now roll into the second part of the question.
Okay, I hear questions, especially regarding non-judicial foreclosure, that I have been trying to comment on for at least 2 weeks. This is serious. One should obtain a storage facility to store all of the precious items that are within the home. There is a CJD date, usually written by hand on the judge's orders. The court will fight back and forth with you until that date, and then when that date comes, you will be evicted by force. If others are allowed to ask questions, they may offer alternatives not yet covered for callers. We all were very knowledgeable about the law, our rights, and so forth, and we hit the courts with everything but the kitchen sink to no avail. Now we need to really hit them with the sink.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're talking about the non-judicial foreclosure where eventually they come in. Yeah, look, these people are breaking the law. When we do a paper for people for the non-judicial foreclosure, it's really, we've set it up now where in the very beginning we didn't have it this way. We weren't sure on how to deal with it in a simple fashion because, remember, we can't go to court and fight everybody's battle for this. But we figured we can maybe do, in the beginning we did what was called an information to inform the court and to inform the individuals who were trying to steal the property from the people to let it be known that this is illegal and lay everything out that it is and that they're participating in a legal process. So it was just an information, which at that point would need it to have been followed up with a show cause. Now, I do think, and I have to go back to look at this, the few cases that we did do that way, we did come in with a show cause after. Now, when we do a paper for somebody on their behalf as the sureties of peace through the grand jury, then we do what's called the show cause by what authority, and we do a notification that that this is breaking the law, and we educate them on how that is so. And if we go to the judge that's responsible, if there is no judge named for that case, usually they try not to do that, then we make the chief judge responsible. After all, he is the responsible party for that courthouse. So we notify that individual, and we also notify the other the individual that is trying to take the home, whether it's a tax foreclosure or a mortgage foreclosure. We'll go after the CEO on a mortgage foreclosure, and we'll go after usually someone in the county because that's where the property is actually taken from. And in different states or different counties, well, I think it's in different states they do different things. Could be the controller that's controlling it. Or it could be someone else. But in any event, whoever that individual, they get served. Now that we have done these and they've ignored the law, the only next step that we have, and it was written for this purpose to move that way, the next step is an indictment. We are preparing an indictment probably on about 100 people, and that's a guess. I'm not even sure exactly what the number is. I don't remember how many foreclosures we've, non-judicial foreclosure papers we've done over the past couple of years. But if it's 50, if we've done 50 of them, then two people for each one of these cases will be held accountable, the chief judge and whoever it is that we notified for the foreclosure. And we're going to ask the grand jury for an indictment. We'll do that collectively with all of them at the same time. As a matter of fact, I think we made note of that a week or two ago that we were planning on doing that. But if not, we'll make a note right now. And so we'll send out an email this week. I'll try to make sure that all of these papers are collected in one place where people can go out and take a look. They need only really read one because they're all the same and understand what we've said or done in these cases, and then we'll call for a grand jury hearing, and then we'll consider an indictment at that point on all of these cases. And if we get that, then we will write the indictment up and file it with the court, and again, await for Jeff Sessions to send his send us United States attorneys to prosecute these cases. You know, one of the things a lot of people misunderstand is this court case that we have going on that we're doing all this filing in. This court case is not a court case. It's really a place for us to store all of our paperwork. So it's a place that brings us by storing this in the court under this court case number. Okay, it's a depository, if you may want to call it that. That brings us under the auspices of the court. And so here we are, a common law grand jury, and they understand exactly what that means. They have been trying to hide the common law grand jury. They've been trying to hide the common law. They've been trying to hide any kind of a court of justice in the federal and state courts, and they've done a very good job on boxing people in and out of the process. And they feel comfortable with that. As long as you don't overturn those things, they feel very comfortable. But when you start to expose them in the courts, they get nervous. We've seen that. We see that they get nervous, and they should get nervous. And they do know that the power and the authority of the people to rise up as a grand jury and take control is there for us to do. They know that. And at least on a federal level. The state level, I don't think there's any hope for those people. They're so dumb, it's pathetic, and we're not even lawyers, and we look to see what they do. It is just unbelievable the mess that they really put together and the things they believe. I mean, talking about being far-fetched, these people believe crazy things. All of these people have been taught in their bar schools, because they all went to bar schools, the lawyers and the judges. They've all been taught that the common law is really the decisions of a court in a particular state. And so the federal, all the federal decisions on the federal level, they think that, that's why they quote all of these different cases when they make battles in the courts. We quote cases not for the purpose of using the court case in itself to position ourselves in whatever it is that we're arguing in the sense of, you know, to support our position, but only for interpretation of the meaning of words and law. That's the only purpose we use it for. And we only use the United States Supreme Court rulings, because that's their boss. And there's a lot of good rulings that have come out of there over the years, and we've got a lot that we use. And that's their boss, and they're supposed to be obedient to it. A lot of times they ignore it. Again, they feel comfortable to ignoring it, because even the United States Supreme Court understands that these people coming into these courts are coming in under statutory processes. After all, they filed the civil papers and so on. I'd love to be able to get a case up into the United States Supreme Court, not for them to make a decision, but for them to make an order, because this is fraud. You can't put up a court of justice and say, hey, you can go get your justice here, and then eliminate courts of justice, because courts of justice are only those who operate under the common law. Any court that does not have a proper tribunal operating under a court of record, any court outside of that does not have the power to fine or incarcerate. Yet all of these administrative courts are constantly fining and constantly incarcerating people and getting away with it. Why? Because we, the people, don't know any better. That's the only reason why. If all the people, or most of the people, or the majority of the movers and shakers, shall I say, become educated and come to an understanding of these things and are able to articulate and defend themselves on these issues, they would disappear. But until the people understand they're ignorant to these things and they think that they have to find someone schooled in law to help them with these things, as long as they're under that kind of thinking, we'll never get out from underneath these people. And, of course, that is our purpose. That's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, to facilitate an education on that issue. I don't know, did I answer all of the questions there, Jen?
Yes, I believe so. That was the last question, and I do not have any announcements for the evening.
Okay, I see. Let's see, Gerard's not in yet. I don't think I have anything else. Is Brent here?
I do not see him.
Okay, I don't see Brent either. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out for Brent and keep an eye out for Gerard. I see Gerard came online. Maybe you can call him off of your other line or something, Jan, and see if he's coming
okay.
in. Because I got an issue I got to deal with here, and I got to drive someone somewhere, and if I can get out of here for a little while. But anyway, meanwhile, I'll take questions until we see if Brent comes in or if Gerard comes in. All right, I'm going to open up the Q&A. Let me ask anybody who may be new, let's give them 5 minutes or a couple of minutes. Let's give at least 2 minutes for people who are new to get into the queue first, and or people who have been trying to get into the queue and haven't been able to over the past weeks or so. Let's give them a minute or two to get them into the queue first. So let me open up the queue. It'll be *6 to get into the queue, and I think it'll tell you to hit *1 or 1 or something. So... so anybody got a question or a comment? We're looking particularly for people who are new or people who have been trying to get into the queue but haven't been able to make it. Let's get those into the queue first. So let's give them a minute or two, and then anyone else can get in. Okay, we're going to take our first caller. It looks like, let's see, next question should be Crystal. How you doing, Crystal? You got the mic.
Hi, how you doing? Okay,
good,
I've been
you.
In court all day. We had about 20 people, and the corruption going on down here. So the reporters are in the courthouse. I think the feds are in the courthouse. I was in court today. They said, well, we're going to take your house. And I said, I have my deeds, warranty. He goes, tough, I'm taking your house. And he goes, oh, by the way, I went to New York about that lawsuit you put in on me, and they threw it out. I said, I would like you to recuse yourself from my case. And we had all our witnesses there, and said we had to stay. You know what he did? He had me to stay until 5 o'clock, but there was like 7 of us that stayed there. So we're doing our affidavits. And today they must have taken about 70 homes illegally. And so I guess when they told us it was a recess, you know, so we left. And that same guy, Julius Epstein, he came back and they stole 4 more houses for like $1,000 for the WPCA bill, which the bill probably didn't even come to $5. But this is the corruption that's going on here in Connecticut. Also, I have a number for you for anybody because they want to do a coverage and interview for the New York Times. And I can get that number over to you. And also, I will give you the Connecticut NBC, the troubleshooters. So they're doing this all over the country, too. And the number is
right. Yeah, if you got contacts and people want to talk to us, just get that information
they do.
To Jan. Okay, get that information to Jan, and Jan will set up an appointment, and we'll talk with them.
Okay, so I got their numbers. They gave me, and they're like,
as a matter of fact, what we'll try to do, I'll try to get it done where we can do it live over here in National.
Well, I will put the number. I'll give you the number right now. So whoever got a problem going anywhere in, you know, Connecticut, New York, because everybody gets NBC, the number is 1-844-303-7377. And we also had a reporter from the New York Times because we had about 500 people at the Common Council, all this illegal foreclosure, and the debt collectors are the attorneys. So when I was just trying to, I was defending myself, and I said, I would like a common law grand jury. He goes, there is no common grand jury. I said, I had asked you before, am I a public servant? He goes, and I told you no. I said, is this my grand jury? He said, no, we don't have no grand jury. I'm the grand jury. I'm the deciding factor. And I said, and you have
well,
to
it shows you how much ignorant. This is the judge talking, huh?
This is how, oh, my God. He was so ignorant. But he said he came up to New York, and he goes, yes, I had to go to New York. I said, that's why you also said you needed to recuse yourself because of the subrogation and that you found out I put a lawsuit against you. He goes, well, guess what? They are not going to touch me. The judge goes, told him, the federal judge told him to go and don't waste his time. And his name is Alfred Jennings. He is the one down here taking everyone. The man is totally obnoxious. He must have stolen hundreds of thousands of homes. And it's a team of attorneys, and now they're buying all the buildings. It's horrifying what's happening.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
their investment. They make an investment in that, and they get
all
the payments
coming
through.
They're buying all the buildings, the cities, everything. It's crazy. But and I'll get you the other woman's number, too.
Jen, you know, try to get this information and try to make an appointment, because if we can make an appointment, then we can let everybody know. We can get it out on the message through our email.
And then we will do this.
We'll do this in an open room. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. They will.
I got the phone number, Crystal.
Okay.
I got the phone number, but who was it for?
This is for NBC, Connecticut Troubleshooters, and it's for corruption, fraud.
Do you have a name?
Public safety. Oh, God. They said, God, I didn't get his name, but this is the card he just gave me. I just left him.
Okay. It doesn't have a name on the card, just a number?
It says Connecticut Response, and it's RESP.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll call and set an appointment. It'll be a phone thing. We're not going to meet personally with them, but we'll do it over the phone, and we want to make an appointment. This way, and we don't want to do the appointment right away, Jen. Give it at least 24 to 48 hours.
But I got,
and then we'll
I
get
have
the word
name.
Out. Then we'll get the word out to all of our members. So anybody that wants to come in on this call and listen in, there'll also be witnesses. We'll also have it recorded. You know, I have had interviews before with a regular newspaper. It's been a long time since I've had one.
Well, I have somebody from the New York Times. Hold on.
Yeah, well, they're nothing but liars, and I know the New York Times, I've never been interviewed by them, but I believe Robert Schultz was, and he gave a really good interview, and then when you read the write-up on it, it was like, well, they must have been talking to someone else, they weren't talking to Robert Schultz, you know, with We the People, you know.
This was a lady, she was down there, she was, as a matter of fact, because she couldn't believe, she was horrified on the story she heard. And she was in the court today when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that because different people were saying the feds were in the courts too. Because it's just, it's going totally crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they want me at my house. I'm sorry?
Why were the feds in the court?
I don't know, but I guess everybody's complaining. It's a lot of mess. Well, with this WPCA, and I told you, they've been packing City Hall like crazy about all this. Because the mayor... Our mayor, that he just got out of jail, and he's an attorney. His whole family's an attorney. His brother's a probate judge, and everybody's losing their shirts off their back. You know, so it's just crazy what's been happening.
All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. You know, we're going to be doing the indictments on all of these judges hopefully soon. And again, you know, we're going to ask the grand jury for an indictment, and we'll let everyone know when that hearing comes in. And anybody who wants to get onto that grand jury can just come in on that call, and we'll take votes and see what we get.
Definitely. Because they want me at my house the 26th of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And I got all my paperwork. So, you know.
Well, now is the time to move it into the federal court for cause. You got to move it there. You got to shut, because what you could do, if you, I'll try to get in touch with you, I don't know, in the next, maybe by towards the end of the week, but I'll try to do it as soon as possible. But the key thing to help you, make sure you get the right wherefore clause. And I'll show you the paperwork that we have filed, and you can then kind of copy the idea and put it all together and make sure you get a good wherefore clause, because you want for them to cease and desist and restore you to your original state of being before they started to intimidate you and start, you know, wasting your time and continue the harassment. So, and then, of course, you also want to go after them for some kind of a monetary value for violating your unalienable right of due process, particularly.
Yeah, it's the federal court, but I did, and they declined me in the federal court. So I got
only because you didn't properly put it in.
Okay.
We'll help you do that. Again,
okay. You
know, it's very tricky to get into the federal court. They will do everything possible to prevent you from getting in. And all you got to do is just slip up here or slip up there, and they'll say, oh, we can't hear your case. They don't want to hear a case. They really don't. So they'll throw cases out left and right. But you have to file them correctly, and then they're stuck. They can't do it.
Okay.
And we'll tip you off to the certain things you got to cover. And again, we'll be covering these little things that we're talking about in our course that we got together. Hopefully, you know, I thought we'd have it up by now, but, you know, we've been so busy and so many things going. We got Chapter 2 done, which I just got to go back and just do a little review with that. We got Chapter 1 almost done. I thought I'd get it done today, but it didn't happen, so I'll probably get done tomorrow. And then I think the introduction might take another couple of days. So if we can get the introduction, Chapter 1, Chapter 2, we can get that course going, and people can start moving through that course while we're working on Chapter 3 and so on and moving on. And people can start on that. I know a lot of people have signed up for that and are anxious to get going on that. And we're going to teach these specific things on writing paperwork on how to get into the federal court, what key things they're looking for, what you need to do to get into the court, and then once you're into the court, you have to recorrect the problems that you created by using their paperwork and giving them the money that they extort off you. You got to get that money back, And even if they don't give it back, as long as the paperwork is in, and then you got to be on top of this for writ of errors, because they're gonna do everything they can to dance around it. They're gonna try to prevent you from continuing, try to have you thrown out of the court. They're gonna write a letter to the judge and ask for more time, like they did to us for 45 days, and they're gonna say we're gonna refile the paper. And no. They got to answer the papers before they can make any motions. Okay,
right.
That's the rules of the court.
And another thing too, I can't emphasize, and so it's so important.
By the way, hold on. There are some exceptions to what I just said, though. I think there are four exceptions to being able to make a motion for a dismissal. One, if they can show that they wouldn't serve properly. Another one, they can show if there is no cause of action. I think there's a third and possibly a fourth, but they're all acceptable and reasonable. Just got to make sure you fulfill the needs that they can't come out after you and throw you away. So,
yeah, that's what he said. I didn't serve him. That's exactly what he said. But make sure everybody, when you go to court, it is so, so important. You got to bring people with you. Okay. As a matter of fact, this one woman, they were going to throw her on the street last Thursday at Thursday morning. And me and this other woman stayed behind. And because we were there, she's in her house until June 15th. So please, everybody, make sure you go into court with people. Bring somebody. Don't go in there.
Yeah, you need people. You need people to do affidavits. And you need to get real quick into the federal court to protect your home. And remember, you know, again, I'll spend a little time with you. You've got a lot of knowledge. You should be able to do a lot of this stuff. I'll just give you the tips. But the key thing here is you're not in there to fight the case. You're in there to make the point that you're not getting due process. That's what you're there for.
Exactly.
Okay?
And that's what, you know.
If these people want to throw me out of my home, if they think they can take my home away and bring me into a court of justice and give me my due process, and if they can get my home that way, then I guess they can get it. But it's not going to happen, tell them.
And first of all, they're
not going to go because they have no way to do it anyway.
And I want to just say this to you. I have my warranty deed, and I have the rights reserved. I can do a quick claim. I can put my house in anybody's name I want to. You know what he told me today? Uh-huh. That's tough. I could take it.
Oh, and you make sure you do a good affidavit on what took place in that court. So.
Yeah.
Let me move on, and we'll try to talk at the end of the week. I'll try to give you a call, okay? All right, Crystal?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, Brent
is here. Gerard, I see Gerard
here,
and I see Brent. Okay, before we move over to Brent. Brent, Gerard, are you able to take control of the board?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Okay, because I got to drive my nephew home, and then I'll be back. It'll probably be 20 minutes, half hour before I get back. But we'll move over to Brent first. Brent, are you here? Can you unmute yourself?
Yes, I'm here.
He's unmuted. Okay, well, let me introduce you. Okay, Brent's going to take the mic for a while. Brent Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. And Gerard,
you
got board, so and I'll be back in 20 minutes. Thank you. Go ahead, Brent.
All right. We'll see you in a little bit. Thanks again. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, and my comments may or may not be the opinions of National Liberty Alliance or anybody associated with it. They're mine alone, and I am, of course, appreciative of the opportunity to talk about them, but let's talk. If there's anything the evil empire is afraid of, it's folks talking together, because when folks talk together, they will discover sooner or later, it always happens this way, they will discover that they have things in common. Something in common, the human experience, makes that true of everyone, and those things that they have in common sometimes will be complaints against those that have power over them. They find themselves in the same situation. Well, once that happens, then they begin to talk about what they can do about it. They may even say, well, we can petition. Let's get together. We'll both sign it, or all three of us, or two or three of us, or 30 or 40 of us. We'll sign a petition. We'll send it to them and tell them we're tired of this, or we want to see this change, or make this suggestion. That's called the right of petition. And that's how our modern Congress started, when it was a reconstitution of the Parliament of England. What happened was the landholders were getting together. The first just got together because they had something in common. They all had rights in land, and they decided to meet together. And then they said, you know, we've got common problems here. We're seeing a common problem. Let's draw up a petition and send it to the king. So they did that. And then it got to be so that the king would either acknowledge it as, yeah, you're right, and he would sign it. And the courts then begin to say, well, if the parliament agrees with the king on this matter, and the king signed this request that they sent, we'll uphold it in our common law courts. And that's how statutes were begun in the modern world. And when I say modern, I mean after the year 1066. It was similar to that, similar, as they say here in the Wabash Valley, but before 1066. But then that became the way things were done. And, of course, by the time we get to our Constitution, that was the common law way of doing things, advice and consent. The old-timers, even before that, way back, 1,500 years ago, they called it the advice and consent of the Whitman, the elders, the white-headed fellows, or white-bearded. And the king couldn't do anything without their consent. And then after 1066, they had to kind of retool things and try to start over, reinstitute the practices of the common law after the Normans got there. And so they did. And amazingly, the traditions got even stronger once they got them going again. But the whole idea of legislation and the veto power of the president started way back there when the landholders of England got together and made a request or wanted to point something out to the king. And if he got to saying, well, I don't want to talk to him, I'll either sign it and send it back or I'll just ignore it. Well, all those things are provided for now in the United States Constitution, and the courts have recognized this. Well, that's what folk are doing here. We have a presence with one another, and we're talking. Different folk were talking at different times, and I like to listen. And I find out that people are just like me more and more as I get older. We have common experiences, and we have common experiences about problems right now. That's what scares the powers that be, especially if they're involved in nefarious activity, and clearly some of them are. That's always true. That's nothing new. We're talking about our Declaration of 76. Declaration of 76. I don't like to call it the Declaration of Independence. I've said this before, but I want to say it again. And the reason I don't like to call it the Declaration of Independence is because it doesn't call itself the Declaration of Independence. That's made up. The word independence doesn't even appear in the document anywhere, not in the heading, not in the body. And then when you read it and you really look through it, it is not a declaration of independence. That's not what they're doing at all. No, it's a declaration of dependence. More particularly, it's a declaration of shifting dependence. And when you read it, they say it just clear as crystal. We are shifting our dependence from the crown of England to the supreme judge of all the world. And that's the phrases that they use in this declaration. I call it the Declaration of 76. It ought to be called that or something else, but not the Declaration of Independence. It is a declaration of shifting dependence. But isn't it of great note? It is independence from England, but it's not. To say it's a Declaration of Independence is a mischaracterization entirely. The signers say in the last paragraph that they trust in the supreme judge of all the world for the rectitude, that is, the rightness, the right-headedness of their intentions, and for his protection, the supreme judge of all the world. Well, who is that supreme judge of all the world? Well, it says there where they signed it. There's a jurat at the beginning. It says, the year of our Lord. Our Lord. Whose Lord? The Lord of those who are signing. Well, who were they talking about? Were they talking about their landlord? I don't think so. Were they talking about the King of England? I don't think so. What Lord could they have been talking about? Well, there's only one possibility that's viable, and that's the supreme judge of all the world. And in that day, all of us signed it, understood the Lord the Lord to be the covenant God of the Bible. And that covenant God of the Bible, by the way, is the man called today Jesus Christ, the ever-living Savior, the Messiah of God, the Anointed One, the man of God's own choosing. That's who it is. So they acknowledge that, and people say, well, that's just mere window dressing. No, people don't sign their names to documents that make them outlaws and liable to be killed and their houses to be burned and sign it in the year of our Lord just as window dressing, just to make it look pretty. No, they put those jurats on there to sign in his name in the year of their Lord, the supreme judge of all the world, because that's what they believe deep in their heart of hearts, in their most deepest being. And our war for separation from Britain worked. And the reason it worked was because they did have a commonness at the very bottom of their souls. And it wasn't, we have a political agreement. That wasn't it. They had a commonness in who their Lord was. And it was pervasive throughout the colonies. And therefore, what happened with America did not go south, as did what's called the Papal Revolutions of Europe. After the Papal Revolution of the 11th century, the French Revolution, which was an offshoot of the Papal Revolution, the Russian Revolution, which was an offshoot following the Papal Revolution. You say, where do you get all this information, Brent? Well, I would suggest a book to you, a big, thick book by a fellow named Berryman called Law and Revolution. It became the textbook at a lot of the law schools in country that had professors that wanted to teach legal history. And that's where I was introduced to it. And that is what happened in Europe. And none of those worked. They all, the last state of those countries was worse than the first. They jumped out of the frying pan into the proverbial fire. That didn't happen in America. Things got better for us after we had a war. Why? Because this wasn't a revolution, what happened in America. This was not an attempt to throw off the past and not look at it again. This was an attempt in America to reestablish the past, not throw it off. I mean, the evil empire, when they have revolving wars, that's what revolution refers to, the revolving round and round and never-ending coups and assassinations and wars. When they do that, they don't want to even talk about the past anymore. They even, like in Russia, they started a new calendar. They wanted the past to be erased from the memories of men. And the French Revolution, they wanted the past to be erased from the memories of men. And they said in France, we're going to strangle the last king with the guts of the last clergyman. We're going to get rid of everything in the past that everyone has held dear to and still does, of course. Nobody ever gets rid of those things, really. You can't force people not to believe truth. But that's what they said, and they said the same thing in Russia, just as two modern examples. Neither one of them worked. But what happened in America worked because it wasn't a revolution. It was not a revolving of war. It was not an attempt to forget the past and establish a dawning of a new age, the age of whatever, Aquarius, or the age of bliss in communism and that kind of thing. The age of reason, they said in France. We're going to worship scholasticism. We're going to worship logic. Everything's going to be logical. There's a theological word for that. It's called BS, bottom sediment. That didn't happen in America. Why? Because in their hearts of hearts, they had a common Lord, a common fundamental, most fundamental understanding of reality, and they did not draw up a Declaration of Independence. They drew up a Declaration of Shifting Dependence, and they say it just that way. Well, we're in that Declaration of Shifting Dependence, what I like to call the Declaration of 76, and I'm requesting of you, my hearers, to let's start something new. Let's don't call it the Declaration of Independence, because that's not what it was. They relied entirely, they said, upon the Supreme Judge of all the world for the rectitude, for the rightness of their intentions. Let's call it the Declaration of 76, the unanimous United States Declaration of 76. That's what it is, and that is a good way to refer to it. just so we don't call it Declaration of Independence. That's false. It gives a false idea that we're independent. Independent? No, we aren't. Never have been. And even if we say we are, we aren't. Because the supreme judge of all the world is utterly sovereign, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. Nothing. Except to accept that sovereignty. Paragraph 22 of our Declaration of 76. No, paragraph 23, I believe we left off. Yep. We're ready for paragraph 23. Paragraph 23 of our Declaration of 76 says this. This says that they're petitioning, they're declaring. No, it's not a petition, it's a declaration. They're declaring that they're shifting their dependence away from the crown of England to the supreme judge of all the world for this reason, and they've got the reasons listed here. Here's another one of them. For, it says, taking away charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments. Let me read that again. It's good to contemplate that. For taking away charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments. Is this what they're doing to us today? Are they trying to take away our charters? Well, let's put it this way. Are they trying to get us to forget our charters? Are they trying to get us to ignore our charters? Are they abolishing our most valuable laws? Are they altering fundamentally the forms of our government? The answer is yes, 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 and yes, yes. Our charters? What charters are they trying to take away? Well, it's the popular opinion among the legal community today, among the judges, among the lawyers, among the big shots in government. It's the popular axiomatic. They say this is just axiomatic. The Declaration of 76 has no, they call it the Declaration of Independence. It has no legal force. They've been saying that since before the war between the northern and southern tiers of the states. Well, Congress disagrees. Congress has said in this part of our law that the Declaration of 76 is one of the four documents, the most fundamental of our laws. That's why I want to go through it here. That's a charter. What's a charter? Well, I'll get to that in a minute. But that's what our Declaration is. What about our Constitution? Is it a charter? Oh, yeah, it's a charter, too. What's a charter? Well, it's an agreement. That's what it is. Charter, the word charter, Magna Carta, the year 1215, the English translation of that Latin phrase is big charter, which we could say also translated accurately, Magna Carta. Magna, like magnanimous. Magna means big. And charter really is a Latin word. It has to do with being white. White. That means a big white piece of paper. They called white paper. It was kind of white. It wasn't real white. Sometimes it was. Vellum, calf skin. That's a white paper. So they call it the big white paper. The big paper. That's what Magna Carta means. Charter means white paper. What is a charter? It's a piece of paper. And it's a piece of paper that is evidence of an agreement. Our Declaration of 76 has signatures on it. And the men that scribed their names to it, they all were saying, by doing that, we agree on what is said in this piece of paper here. It's an agreement. That's what a charter is. Magna Carta is an agreement that the Crown of England said it agreed with the land, it, King John at that time, but he was signing for all of those that took the crown after him, said this is an agreement between the crown and the landholders of England as to what the law is and how it applies in the cases cited in this charter, this big piece of paper. It's an agreement. The covenants of Scotland before that were agreements. This is all in our tradition, and that's the reason I bring this up. Our tradition is a common law tradition, and it has come to us from those folks on the other side of the pond, and we look into our history of how this all came about, and it was a series of agreements, different statements through the centuries of what the law was, what the common law was, signed. We have a tradition of this. We can find it in the Bible, in the books of the Bible, in Ezra and Nehemiah. You find agreements, people signing them, people agreeing. You find it in the first five books of the Bible, the writings of Moses. The parts of it were read, and all the people said, yes, we agree. How did they say we agree? Well, in the old Hebrew way, they used the old Hebrew word, amen. And all the people said, the people. Who's the people in the Old Testament? The militia, the armed men. That's what the people means, that phrase, ha'am. They said, we agree, amen. That means affirmative. Amen's an old word that means rock solid. Rock has to do with rocks, not just rolling rocks. Rolling stones, but bedrocks, immovable rocks, crags that stick out of the ground. That's an in situ rock, the geologist might say. Amen. Well, there were agreements. They can be recorded. They can be said orally and then recorded, as happened in the writings of the Old Testament, Moses. The Scottish Covenants of the 1637 or 38, I forget. Anyway, there were covenants back then, and they thousands of people signed them. And then we get down in England, and you've got the English Bill of Rights, the Clarendon Agreements, Henry II, just all these agreements, the laws of Edward the Confessor signed. And then you got Magna Carta. It was one in a long series. I like to call it our Constitution, the Declaration of 76, Magna Carta. I like to call these solid stepping stones in our own tradition. There are many, many more besides that. We have charters. We have state constitutions. And in those days, the colonial charters were land grants from the Crown of England to the folk that came here. And each one of the colonies had a land grant. There were 13 colonies that became 13 states. And the charter, a big piece of paper that the Crown wrote up, said you get this land and you're entitled to the enjoyment of all the rights of Englishmen on this land in the New World. Well, what does that mean? That means the common law. That means then, of course, included in that is the right to remain silent, freedom of speech. Freedom. Not freedom, no, a responsibility. A right, that's a responsibility. Different than a freedom stresses different things. That word is different than right. The freedom, the right, the duty to the jurisdiction, that's what right is, to carry a firearm. The duty you have to serve on the grand jury, to serve on the petit jury, to do your duty. Well, all those things were part of the charters of the... You see, our Constitution of the United States includes, it's a common law document, it's a brief of common law government, and includes in it some of the chief principles, the first principles of our common law. And just like the charters that came from England, how could they include anything else? They were a common law country. And when they came here, they insisted, well, we'll go and we'll risk our lives and separate ourselves from our families, never to see our friends and family in our home country again. We'll do all that if the Crown will guarantee to us protection as British subjects of the same common law freedom, rights and freedoms we have, the enjoyment of them. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll do that. And they drew up these charters and they wanted them to go. They wanted that land. They needed the resources. Well, he's saying here, you have done away with these charters. You said that we'd enjoy the common law here, but now you say you're not even a common law king in the colonies. You're calling yourself emperor in your empire, in the British Empire. You can do that with the folks on the other side of the world that aren't British, over there in India and Pakistan, and they were doing it, by the way. But you can't do that to us. We're British. You see? The British, the Crown and Parliament tried to do to their cousins, and it says that in the Declaration of 76, our ties of consanguinity. It says that in the last paragraph. Ties? They said, we have ties of consanguinity. Big fancy word. Tom Jefferson wasn't real old when he wrote that document. He was 32. He probably enjoyed big words. When you're younger, you do. I don't enjoy them as much as I used to. Try to understand them. Lapsarianism and superlapsarianism. I used to try to understand words like that. I'm not as impressed. But consanguinity means, con means with, and sanguine means blood. Consanguinity is common blood. That means we're cousins. We have a common ancestor. And people in Britain believed that at that time, and there was good evidence for it, probably true. But at any rate, they were cousins, and they did. They won their common law, and the crown abolished them. The king said, I'm no longer king over there. I'm emperor, so you don't have a right to representation in any legislative assembly. And my power, by the way, since I'm not a common law king, my power is no longer limited. It's limited here in England, but it's not limited in the colonies, and I think I said before, too, one of the other things that came with that, the British crown in Britain allowed slavery in the colonies. Why? Oh, they said the common law didn't apply there. Slavery was never, never, in the history of as far back as we can go, slavery has never been lawful in Britain. Not to say that people didn't have slaves in Britain, but they would bring them there from Virginia and other places, but because it was a common law country, the common law says as soon as your foot touches the soil of this island, you are ipso facto and forever free. That, and we have cases on record that prove that, and Mansfield studied the subject, and he going back in the Somerset case of the slave that came from Virginia. They did a habeas corpus. He ran away, said, I'm free, and they said, no, you aren't, and they went to court. Mansfield said, no, he's free. There has been a time in the history of Mansfield, Judge Mansfield, never has been a time in the history of our common law of this island that slavery has ever been lawful that I could ever find. So he's free. And that doctrine eventually was reestablished in some of the states of America, and it became very important later on. All of these things are part of our tradition. But because they said, and foolishly, and it's, of course, on our part as Americans, it's a black spot in our history that we said we wanted the common law, but then we wanted to have slavery also. That's an inconsistency that could not have lasted. For whatever reason, it wasn't going to last. It was a rattlesnake. The whole doctrine was a rattlesnake in the room at the Constitutional Convention. They didn't know how to deal with it. There are things in the Constitution that no longer apply because of it. It's a long story. But I say that to drive home the point even harder, that our common law is the reason for our existence. It was the reason for our independence. It was the reason, not our independence, yeah, here I am talking that way, for our shifting dependence. It is the reason for all of the terrible things that happened after that and the terrible bloody war that occurred when the states fought each other. That was the reason for it. And it was all about problems, trying to sort out the confusion that had been created because our common law was ignored in the colonies by Britain. And there were Americans that should not have gone along with it. It created a schizophrenic attitude in their own country, and there was a lot of bloodshed because of it, and despair, I might add. Well, what they're doing to us today, they're taking away our charters, they're abolishing our most valuable laws. Abolishing our most valuable laws? What are our most valuable laws? Well, those are our fundamental first principles. The laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, this document we're talking about, this Declaration of 76, says that the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, I'm quoting the document, embrace our fundamental laws, Americans. Two volumes, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. William Blackstone tells us, writing about 11 years before our Declaration of 76, in his four volumes on the laws of England, he says that phrase, laws of nature and laws of nature's God, refers to the two volumes of our fundamental law. That's in his first volume. He goes over all that. And those two volumes are the only volumes that comprise all of our understanding, our fundamental understanding of the law. And it says here that they're wanting to take away their fundamental law. Well, that's true. The laws of nature are the laws, that first volume, are the laws unwritten in the nature of things. We call that a significant slice of it is our common law. It's unwritten. It's called our unwritten law. It's the law that we are responsible to observe and follow. It embraces everything from the laws of nature, the fact established that the sun comes up, all the movements of the heavens and the bodies of the heavens, the movements, the law of gravity, the law of what we call today physics. They used to call it natural philosophy. This is the laws of nature.
the way things are in nature, and they will not change. It is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it. And if you violate those laws, you can be seriously injured. There are a lot of laws, and we learn them all, and we learn to live with them, but a significant slice of that is our common law. That's the first volume, the laws of nature. And then the second volume, in our Declaration of 76, William Blackstone expounds that before the Declaration was written. Thomas Jefferson didn't make up that phrase. Most everything in our Declaration of 76 is a result of his learning. And he took that phrase, lifted it, and used it. The second volume, William Blackstone says, is not the unwritten volume. It is the written volume called the Bible. Those are always under attack, have always been, and are under systematic attack now. Don't let them be taken away. As Coverdale said, Miles Coverdale, one of the earlier translators of the Bible into English, before the King James Bible, Miles Coverdale, back in the 1500s, he said this, and I believe it to be true from experience and from reading history, absolutely true on the local level and on the national level and on the family level and on the individual level. He said, where the Bible goes, it brings order. Wherever it goes, it brings order. It is its presence. People talking about it. People discussing it, contemplating it. It makes friends, neighbors, and kin. It is our Pope. You want a Pope? The Bible's your Pope. There is no higher authority. There never has been, and there never will be. And it is resilient beyond belief. It has been hacked, stabbed, knocked around, declared invalid, declared a fraud, a fake. It's been put in the coffin. The funeral procession has been formed. The epitaph has been cut on the tombstone. But as Ram says, somehow the corpse never stays put. It's powerful. And we wouldn't be here without it, by the way. The country wouldn't exist. It has been our fundamental law. As Captain Preston, veteran of the Battle of Concord, the sister battle to the Battle of Lexington, said, he said, when he was asked, he was over 90 years old, and he was asked, why did you go to fight the British? Why did you square off with the most powerful army on the face of the planet, well-fed, well-trained? And all the Hessians that went with brutal men, good fighters, just brutal. What motivated you as a farmer to square off with these fellows and your other friends? He said, well, he said, were you reading the philosophers? Were you reading Locke and Sidney, Algernon Sidney and Harrington, and about the eternal principles of liberty? He said, no, I never heard of those guys. He said, we read only the Bible and the Catechism and Watts, Psalms, and Hymns. If you want to know what made men tick at that time, you go back and read about them. Read the memoirs, the only memoirs we have of a revolutionary soldier, a boy. Signed in at 16, served 7 years, made sergeant before he got out, and he wrote all of his experiences in a book, the only one we have, of a rank-and-file soldier of the Revolution. You want to know what made him tick? You want to know deep down inside what he was thinking? You can't find better reading. Not only is it entertaining, it's instructional because it's his impressions. But you begin to see that, well, what was deep down inside? And the things I'm telling you aren't just opinions. I'm just repeating what I read from their testimony, what they said, not what I think about it. I like to not speculate and stick to the stuff I can know for sure. Well, America's earliest founders believed the promises of the Bible, and they believed that these promises of the Bible were a species of common law contract called covenants. That's what they called them. Unfortunate they used that fancy word. There's another fancy word, covenants. What that means is an agreement, a promise. That's what it means. A covenant is a promise. And a common law, by the way, a contract is a promise. It may be an exchange of promises. It may be only one promise. But it's a promise that the law will enforce. Well, that's what this covenant is that these people in America believed. It was their fundamental understanding of reality. They all understood. well, I'm sure there was somebody that didn't, but just across the board, everybody accepted the idea that God had made promises to men, and they called them covenants. And they believed that the law, the will of God, would enforce these covenants, these promises. And they said they were the stuff, these promises are the stuff that held together common law government. What I see in looking at this stuff all the years I've been looking at it from the past, trying to understand what has happened so that I can project my understanding a little into the future and know which way we're tending and what could happen and probably will happen. What I've discerned about these folk, I'll just pass along what I see in my mind clearly. These folk made no real distinction between the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The two volumes, the first unwritten in the nature of things and the second unwritten in the Bible. The reason they made no distinction because they saw that the author of both was the same God. The laws of nature. Consider that phrase. That phrase isn't just spun off, and it arose out of Britain. Tom Jefferson didn't make it up. But think about the words and go over to your mind. The laws of nature, volume 1, and the laws of nature's God, volume 2. Even the way it's phrased, you can't separate the two. And that's the way they saw it, too. And they said that their common law contract is the same, has the same doctrines, the same teachings, the same principles as God's law of contract. It is the same. As James Wilson said, he was on the first panel of the United States Supreme Court. He said that our common law, I'm quoting him, our common law is of origin divine. Now that's a stabbing statement. He wasn't the only one that said it. Other people said it too, of great note. But its origins are from the only true lawgiver, as James says in the New Testament. Now, the difference between the two, and this should be addressed, the Bible, and in cases of misunderstanding between the two, the Bible is the final rule, the final decider if there's a disagreement or an apparent inconsistency. Why? Because the common law, the laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things, are for us to observe and express by speaking. We teach our children, oh, here's just something you don't want to do. Even when children are little, you tell them little things you don't want them to do so they won't get hurt. But don't cross the street unless you're holding my hand. Why? Well, these cars coming down through here, going 60, 50, 40, there's a law of nature that operates here, and I don't want you out in the street. Don't go to the neighbor's house, and don't try to pet that dog, because that dog, I've been around dogs like that, they're dangerous. Well, see, that's a parent observing, a mother, a father observing the laws of nature, and they have learned through experience, they see the badges of what might happen. And that's the unwritten laws of nature. And that's why, and people agree or disagree on those. That's why I said our charters are agreements. People observing the laws of nature of good government and agreeing about it. Okay, here's what it is. Our courts issue opinions. And 4 out of 5 justices out of 9 on the Supreme Court will agree. Well, that's because they're making observations. That's what the laws of nature are. And we have a duty to better and better fine-tune our understanding of our surroundings so that we can live safe and decent lives. But the laws of nature's God, written, is in writing. It's very particular. Our founders called it the particular, and William Blackstone called it this too in his first volume, because it's the way common law talked about our Bible, the particular revelation of God, the particular revelation of the lawgiver. So in the cases of inconsistency or misunderstanding or apparent disagreement between the two, because men do misstate things, misobserve things, misunderstand things, and when they do that, then they can resort to the particular revelation, and the Bible is exceedingly particular, and it will never be exhausted. Most people don't spend much time particularly trying to discern what it says, and that's a lot of our problem, too. But they're trying to take these things away from us, as it says, taking away our charters, abolishing, that's the promises we've been given, abolishing our most valuable laws, altering fundamentally. That, and of course, if you take away the valuable laws, you're going to alter fundamentally our forms of government. It's been happening. One fellow wrote a book. I got to quit here in just a minute. I've been talking long enough. One fellow wrote a book. He was a Quaker, a communist Quaker, which is not unusual in that sect, by the way. I mean, it's not like it dominates it, but there have been a few communist Quakers. And this fellow lived about 110 years ago. I thought if I talked long enough, but, oh, his name was Charles Beard. I was hoping I could remember his name, Charles Beard. And he wrote a book. And his intention in writing that book was to fundamentally alter our system of government, and he did. And his point of view in that book has now taken over. It has altered our common law government here in America, as our Constitution expresses it. What is it? Well, he said in that book, and he argued, that the Supreme Court of the United States is the final rule in all matters. That's not what our Constitution says. Our Constitution never says the Supreme Court is the final rule in all matters. It never says the President is either, and it never says the Congress is either. That's not common law government. Common law government is separation of powers. Every three branches, each one of them responsible to do what's right no matter what the other one says. If they're in agreement, fine, but if they aren't, they have an obligation to make sure they make that obvious and do what they can to wield all the lawful powers they have in any given instance. Well, Beard changed. That altered. And the Supreme Court, of course, likes that. And the lawyers see it that way now. It's a false view. It's odd, isn't it? And it's one of the most fundamental things about our Constitution and our common law. And it's not something I learned in any law school. I learned it when I took the Constitution test in eighth grade, and then later I had to take it to graduate from high school. I remembered that the branches are co-equal. We had this fellow teaching the class in high school. His name was Steve Britt. I've often wondered what happened to him. He was 6'5" and redheaded. And of course, we made fun of him behind his back like all high school students do with their teachers, but we all liked him. And he had been a basketball player at the University of Evansville. Great big tall fella. But he knew his Constitution, and he was the one responsible to prepare us for our Constitution test, all if you were a senior in high school. And boy, I learned that point. I believed it. I thought everybody knew it. And now I find out that all the lawyers and judges think something else. And it's blatantly obvious, but that has changed, as it says here. Fundamentally altered our systems of government. This document, the Declaration of 76, is practical, it's applicable, as is our Bible, right now. And the older a fellow gets, and the more he contemplates it, you see that men don't change. And the problems, you see them, they're the same. Year after year, decade after decade, century after century, they're fundamentally the same. They do not change. And this document, our Constitution of the United States, read it and think about, say to yourself, Does this apply now? Are they doing this now? Yes, they are. Because that's where our Declaration of 76 has lasted and been so well known around the world for so long, because it's applicable over and over and over again. Recently, it was read on the floor of the legislature in California. Those that want to split off from the cities read it into the record, thinking people would have forgotten it. I'm glad they did. Thank you very much, Gerard. And if John's back from giving his nephew a lift, I appreciate it, and I'll yield back to whoever's there.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Brent. Well, we have like a couple people in the only a couple of people. First off, Jan, did you get any questions this week? If you're there. Well, I'll give Jan a chance to catch up here and figure that out.
Yeah, he already asked them, so I already responded.
Oh, I didn't know I wasn't
go on
here.
Open
okay.
For anybody wants to get into the queue, *6.
Okay, so we have Linda. Linda from Virginia. I'm going to open you up. Go ahead. What do you got?
Hi. I'm just calling really with an update, I guess. For, I guess, whoever doesn't know, I have the code enforcement case. Came on my property without notice. I wasn't home. I got a violation notice and then subsequently was charged criminally. So anyway, Last Tuesday, I got a warrant notice on the windshield of my vehicle, and I called right away, but I couldn't get anybody till the next day. And the police officer said, the notice said it's imperative I get a hold of them for this person, and it had my name, and it said it was from the warrant service unit. So I was thinking, warrant for what? Warrant for arrest? Warrant, you know. So anyway, I talked to the officer, and I had to keep pushing to find out what it was. And he said it was a summons to go to court, and I should pick it up at the police station. Now, alarms were going off in my head because I was like, doesn't the sheriff usually serve a summons? And why should I have to go to the police department and pick it up? I was thinking that I was going to get arrested, and they were just telling me to go to the police department and turn myself in. So anyway, it was a summons to go to court that Friday that was 2 days later. So there was no time to prepare any defense or anything. And it didn't have a case number on it, and I looked it up on the court page, couldn't find anything on it. And it just said, anyway.
So you missed it. Wait a minute. You missed the date that was on the paper? You didn't make it to court?
No, it was 2 days later. I only had 2 days, so I didn't have any time to find out anything or prepare for it.
Did you show up, though? Did you show up?
I did. I showed up.
Yeah,
and
it sounds like they would like you not to show up so they can issue a warrant.
Maybe. I don't know. But so I went, and the judge, they asked he asked me to speak, and I actually started to shoot myself in the foot again, like I'm so good at doing. But then he cut me off and asked the code enforcement officer to speak, and he asked him to describe the case, and he described it as an addition over my garage that's a storage area, and the dates and everything, the last inspection, whatever. And then the judge asked him, he said, what kind of items need to be addressed? And I didn't realize it at the time, but he said the trusses, which are a problem, and then the stairway and electrical. I had to put in the main cable that comes into your house that brings you electric. I had to install that, and I did that, and it was approved. The inspection was approved. That's done. The only thing that's left is two lights and a smoke alarm, which you really don't need a permit for. And then I had to do a stairway, and the stairway is done. But the issue is the trusses, and I have tried and tried and tried to get somebody to do the repairs on the trusses, and I have not been able to find anybody yet. And I've been going back and forth with the building official since February 20th, and I was getting deflection, and he would answer questions that I didn't ask and send me volumes of manuals and everything to read through. And finally, I just kept on, and then finally, just recently, he told me, I said, the reason I'm asking is because I haven't been able to find someone, which he already knows, but that's beside the point. So he gave me a search. He said, search under this, and I had not searched under that exact term, which was structural engineers. I had searched under engineers, I had searched under design professionals, I had searched under, But anyway, I did search under that, and I came up with more names. I have more names now to contact. But anyway, back to, so the enforcement officer says the trusses, the stairway, and electrical. And the judge says, So these are safety issues. And the code enforcement officer said yes. And right then, anyway, then he asked me if I had anything to say. Well, I guess I'll finish this. So what I said was, I brought up the warrant notice. And I said, why is it that a sheriff usually serves a summons. I said, why is it that I get this strange-looking little yellow piece of paper? And I said, it only gave me, and it turned out it was for a summons to go to court 2 days later. Well, no, I didn't say that. I just said it was a summons to go to court. And then the judge asked me, he said, when did you get this? And I said, 2 days ago. And he kind of takes his hand and he puts the palm of his hand to his forehead. And then he says to me, he says, so do you want a continuance? And I said, I do. And they set it for June 8th. So that was the end of that. It didn't take long at all. And it just came down to this not enough notice thing. But I realized later that that there's a script here. When he said what kinds of items, and he said these specific items, that they are making it look like these are safety issues, and that this is an unsafe structure. Which then I knew 36-106 of the code. It's the about building code. Basically addresses unsafe structures. So it looks like to me that they're headed in the direction of unsafe structures, which then leads to jail time of 5 days and $1,000 to $2,500 fine. And the other thing is this, that's on a second offense, And right there on the paper, on the complaint, it says, this is a second offense. So it's pretty clear. Go ahead.
It is a second offense?
No, it's just ongoing. What happened was the judge that was on, I started in general district and I appealed to circuit court, and the judge that was on that case retired. So he told me in the hearing, he told me twice, in two different hearings, that he was retiring and that the chief judge had told him to clear up the cases.
Well, listen, just wait a minute. Stop. First of all, if it's a second offense, the first offense you would have had been closed out and maybe convicted on. And then they would have to come back and they'd have to recharge you again. If the first case was never settled. Yeah, but if it was never settled, I mean, look at, they gave you, I don't know what, a summons, they gave you a fine that you were supposed to pay, and then they would have to come back and they'd have to recharge you again, which if you look at your paperwork, you may find that, look at, they always fall down on due process. They don't even follow their own statutes as far as the process goes. You should look at your paperwork and make sure that case was closed. I mean, if it's a continuing case and it was never closed, then you can argue that it is not a second offense. We're still on the first offense.
The way they set this up is they tell you, they find you guilty, and then they say, they tell you to abate the work. And then when you don't abate the work, I can't, you know, with this issue with the trusses, I can't completely abate it and get the inspection. So they just find you guilty, and that's the end of it because you didn't abate the work. I don't know. I don't really.
Yeah, then they have to come out and charge you again to be a second offense. They have to give you a new charge. It's the same trust. It's not a new charge. It's an old charge. But anyway, look at you're going round and round with this thing. I know you don't have enough money to do this and that. The building inspector obviously doesn't want to help you. He's looking to get your place condemned so they can get a hold of it or whatever's going on. I don't know. I mean, really, how unsafe is it? Did you get it? Did you actually get an engineer in there to give an opinion, other than the building inspector's opinion? I would, you know, look, if you get some guy to come in, you got a crack strut. Let him put some steel on either side of it, and let an engineer sign off on it, and that will be the end of it. You know what I'm saying?
I've tried for a year now, calling all different kinds of, I called roofing companies, fire, like restoration companies, engineers, I don't know, the list is just long.
Find some local carpenter, let them go in there and fix it, and then what you do is you get an engineer to come in and look at it. I mean, the building inspector could look at it too, but he's going to give you trouble because he started this thing. And look at you. Are you living in the house alone?
This is a garage. It's actually separate from my house.
And he says it's above, it's unsafe.
It's above the, well, no, I'm just saying that's what they seem to be leading up to in this new case that they filed.
Where are the crack struts? In the garage?
They're in the garage. It's an addition over the garage, and it's just plain common fink trusses. They're all the same.
Well, first of all, there's nobody in there but you.
Right. I'm the only one here, and I'm the builder.
Else.
I'm the one that built it.
And you're the one that built it. So, you know, I don't know that they can hold you to that. You know, I don't, you know.
Right. It's just, it's pretty clear where they're headed with it, you know, to condemn.
Well, I don't know. I think you need to be more proactive, and I think you got to stop following everything they tell you. You know, if you built it, then go up there and get yourself some two pieces of metal and lag them stupid trusses together and take pictures and say, look, I fixed it. And
they won't let you do that. They won't let you do that. I've gone round and round with them on that. And in fact,
they won't let you do that. They say it has to be engineered, right?
It has to be engineered. Not only that, I've gone round and round with the building official, like I said, since February, because he's telling me it has to be a Virginia certified engineer, and nowhere in the code does it mention Virginia at all. It does say that it has to be a an engineered repair, but it doesn't say anything.
They can't tell you that he has to come from Virginia. What are they trying to
they
do?
Are,
like
they are. That's what they're telling me.
Well, what, is gravity different in Virginia than it is in any other state?
Exactly, yeah. Somebody told me
look,
it ties back to...
An engineer has a license. An engineer has
right.
a license. So
that's
what
it ties back
they only
to.
Want to accept a license from Virginia, and that's baloney. And look, an engineer puts a stamp on it. Let an engineer draw up the way he would want it fixed. And you can't tell me that you can't plate those things. I know you can, but that's where I would go. I would go to fixing the thing and boxing it up and getting some engineer to sign it. Even, I don't know, you know, I always find engineers to do my stuff. I mean, you don't want to go to a big engineering firm. Find some old guy that's like half retired that has an engineering license.
I tried that. All of them, I was getting frustrated, and, you know, I had one tell me that I was not going to find anybody because of the liability and because of one said that the insurance companies are coming and anything that's not done right, they won't pay the claim and then it comes back to them. So I don't really know. I don't know the whole industry, you know, but I know what I've been told. And I know that I would have had this done a long time ago had I been able to get anybody, but I have not been able to get anybody to do it.
Look,
but now
I would have ripped that thing down by now. ripped it down and say, there, it's gone. Now get out of here.
Now, I just got new, some more advice from someone that was referred, that the other option is to order new trusses and put the new trusses in there. You know, that's another option, but it's more of a rework thing. So there's more work to it. So, but that is a way, if I really can't find anybody, that is a way I could go, I guess. But
you don't have a legal problem, you have an engineering problem. Look, the trouble is you have
something
that they can call dangerous, and you could jump up and down on common law all day. The fact is, if you got something's dangerous that this guy thinks is dangerous, and I don't know how he got in there in the first place, but the thing is that, you know, until you address that, you're going to be there. Nobody's going to sign off or leave you alone, because they figure if it falls down on your head, your family's going to sue them for not shutting the building down or whatever. So,
well, it's in a garage, and it's a light storage, you know. It's
yeah, but it's a technicality, and they're not going to sign off, and you got into this thing. You need to figure out your way out of it, and your way out of this is not what common law. Your way out of this was a hammer and nails. That's what you need.
I can't fix it. I would have fixed it a long time ago. I'm prohibited from fixing it. They say I have to have an engineer. But I've got this new list now. So who knows, maybe I can find somebody, you know.
They told me a lot of things that they wanted me to do, and I went ahead and did them my way anyway and brought the finished product in and challenged them. And look, there's ways around everything. Go buy an engineered strut, take the panels off the roof, stick it in there, and lag it to it. There's nothing he can say. And say, there's an engineered strut. Get the information on the strut.
I have the repair drawings from the manufacturer, Mitek. Mitek is the manufacturer of the plates. And I have the repair drawings for that. And I sent it to them, and I said, I said, I'm planning on using these to fix the trusses. I just want you to confirm it. They came back and said they cannot be used. That's with the gusset and all that, you know, and they will not let me do it.
Well, I would call that company up. Do they have an engineered stamp on those drawings?
Yes, they do. It says right on there, engineered,
so
you know.
You call the engineer up, you call up the company, and you call up the engineer, and you say, look, I went to the building department, and they told me they will not let me use your engineered repair. Can you give them a call?
I have that on my list to call them. I just haven't.
You should have done it 6 months ago. Listen.
Oh, my God.
They will not. If that engineer, look, an engineer is very protective of his work. What they're telling you is he just engineered you something that is faulty. I mean, that's a pretty arrogant thing for them to say. That engineer will maybe sue them for that. And you'll both make some money. But I want
to
move on. To
top all this off, these trusses were damaged by someone coming on my property unlawfully. And the reason I know that is because I put the electrical light, the two lights and a smoke alarm in. And the wires for those went right across this area. And there's no way I would have missed that, you know. And so those trusses were damaged after that electrical wiring was put in.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about
that.
And
now that I can't get anybody, it makes me wonder, you know, and there's some more stuff that I'm not going to say on here, but there's some more to it. So.
Yeah. Anyway, you know where you're at.
And another thing is there's a 4-lane highway that's proposed to come right across my property. And I was thinking, you know, one of the things I was thinking is that they are, you know, because of all the other things that have happened, it's just one obstruction after the other. And it just seems like they are trying to keep me from ever being able to get this permit approved. And I have to wonder if it's not connected with the, you know, the condemnation with that whole road coming through.
They don't need that. If they wanted your property, they could condemn it regardless of what was wrong with it. They condemn it all for the public good. They just take it and they give you what they give you a quote unquote fair market value. I don't think the highway is causing all this. I think that would be a very convoluted way of going around it. You know what I mean? Look at when they want to put a highway through a house. That's what they do. They put the highway in, and you're out of there.
But there's eminent domain. There's eminent domain abuse where they come in and they try to get the property, you know, other ways because they really don't want to pay fair market value. So
they don't pay fair market value. They pay what they think it's worth. But anyway, I got to move on. This is
okay.
We're getting into areas that are not common law forte. Okay.
All right. Thanks. I just wanted to say what happened. Okay.
Yeah, all right. Thanks. Okay, Fred. I got my skewer all sharpened up. Let's go.
Yeah, you woke me up. Boy, you know, that girl, I mean, good Lord. You know, my advice to her would be to get her original plans, the architect that drew up the plans for the building she's in, and see if the guy's still alive. Or his engineering firm is still around. Contact him and have him modify, because he's got to be local. He could.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a pretty convoluted
thing. Cross him up in a few minutes. I mean, I've dealt with code enforcement before. They're nothing but crooks.
Yeah, well.
They are.
I'm sure. I know. I mean, I've been there.
If you knew the footsteps the guy was going to take, you know, a bear trap might be nice.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean it that way, but anyway, the reason I wanted to ask a question was I have been following the Q and the Anon postings, and it's not that I want to sidetrack NLA from anything, but I wanted to make two points. The most important point, I think, is the fact that in everything that they're posting on the queue, none of it is related to the common law, the rule of law, or the oath of office. They barely mention the grand jury. So these people are all about their statutory codes. The second point I wanted to make was what Q was trying to do is get everybody on board to start a barrage. What they wanted to do was to hijack the high trending tweets on the Twitter accounts and then hijack them and throw in the stuff about release the documents unredacted and jail them all now. Boom. Well, if, you know, that gave me a little thought, maybe we could get our people in NLA to do the same thing, is grab some trending tweets and hijack them and go after the court system in America, revert back to the common law.
Listen, go on the Patriot Soapbox 24/7. It's Cuniverse. It's a bunch of patriots that decipher the Qs, and they're all about common law. They got guys in there from England and Ireland that know the old common law, and that's all they talk about. And right now they're rallying National Liberty Alliance. We got to get over there. We've picked up some members. They want to do classes with us. So maybe Q might not be about common law, but these people that are following Trump and they're following Q, they're all about the common law. You should go over there and listen to them sometime. They interviewed
the people you're
me.
Talking,
we got listen to me. Wait, John has put up the interview that they did with me over our case, and they got 7,000 people on every time that thing is live. So when I was being interviewed, that thing went out. I don't know. We must have got 6,000 hits on that. So don't lump everybody in with generalities. I don't know what Q is doing, and I don't care. But these people are following him. They're Trump supporters, but they're all about common law. Go on to Cuniverse and listen to that Patriot 7 24/7 and listen to those guys that are working. They're all retired military. They're all, you know, mainstream America people. So it's pretty good. They're banded together pretty good, and they're actually supporting us. And I think they're going to give us a nice shot in the arm because they're impressed with our work. So.
All right. I'll rethink that because it depends on what time of day as to who you get.
Well, just go on our website and listen to the interview that they did with me on that on that Q-universe.
There was one other point I wanted to make.
Uh-huh.
The NRA has been under brutal attack, and I think NRA, we need to partner up with the NRA if it's possible to preserve our gun rights and take back our courts.
I'm not real happy with the gun with the NRA. Let me tell you what. I go to Gun Owners of America because the NRA has sold us out numerous times in the past. And I know they're an old organization and they're very popular, but there were things that, you know, they keep giving in and they keep giving in, and I'm not happy with them. I pulled my NRA membership because of some of the stupid things that they gave away on our rights, the NRA. They need to brush up on their constitution. Gun Owners of America, look at them. Look at what they're doing compared to what the NRA is saying. I send my money to GOA before I send it to the NRA. I ripped the sticker right off of my truck because the NRA has sold us out numerous times. Oh, it's okay. We'll take this handle off the gun and all this stuff. They agreed to all that crap, and it's nothing but crap. And Larry Pratt from the Gun Owners of America, he says, listen, you shouldn't even need a permit to own a gun. That's the way the NRA is supposed to be talking. Not, well let's talk about how we're going to do the permits. It's like come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. I'm telling you, the NRA is like Rush Limbaugh, where he gives people a place to go so they feel like they're doing something. They go, blah, 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 nothing gets done. And that's the NRA as far as I'm concerned. I'm sorry I don't agree with you with them. Gun Owners of America or Jews for the Preservation of Firearms, good organizations, been around forever, done wonderful work. The NRA, every time they're taking one step forward and two steps backwards. They're helping facilitate the takeover of our guns, and that's my opinion.
Gerard?
Yeah.
Gerard, I wanted to make a point about the NRA also. I feel compelled to.
Mm-hmm.
When I ran for Congress, the NRA told me to go fly a kite. They wouldn't even talk to me. And I went to Washington, D.C. I thought, well, surely they'll support me. No, they supported the fellow that was voting for Clinton's crime bill. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what I learned about the NRA. And at that time, I met Larry Pratt, and he wasn't coming out at that time against the NRA because he didn't have the political support and the widespread support that Gun Owners of America has now. But he gave me, as an organization, the maximum amount allowed by law in money. He came to the district, and he traveled with me and spoke, introduced me, anything else he could do. And I learned that the NRA, the things that I learned about the NRA, I don't even want to say some of them because it's not even fit to talk about in polite company. But anytime there's been an organization around for any length of time, the evil empire is going to get control of it. And the evil empire has control of the NRA. And what they don't want to ruin is all the money that the people send to the NRA, because now that they're in control, and they've been in control for 30 years, maybe probably a little longer, according to my listen to Larry Pratt, I get that impression. But there's hundreds and millions of dollars that come in. And the evil empire has control, but the trick is, and they're good at it, make it look like we're still doing something for the gun owners. We don't want to blow our cover. We want the money to keep coming in, but we don't really want to do anything. We want to make it look like we're trying, as we used to say, mill about smartly. But ask yourself, are things better after the NRA 40, 50 years? They've been working hard, they say. Are we better off? Do we have better a better point of view in America? Have they changed public opinion?
Are the legislators treating us better? Are the congressmen and the president? No, 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 no. And by the way, the same thing is true of the National Right to Life organization. They were hijacked years ago, too. They like that money coming in. They like to keep people pumped up. They like to send out those emails, those news. Oh, yeah, send us money. Here's what we're doing. It's baloney. The battles that we fight are fought. We stand, each one of us, by ourselves, and we fight. And if somebody else joins us and we can get together, that's great. But be careful with these organizations. They're all the same. You know, the evil empire, if they can control one organization and or one powerful person, they can control a lot. And they do. And that's the way it works. And they never start their own organizations. They always steal organizations. They steal colleges, universities, churches, political action groups of all kinds. And that's just giving you my experience, I suppose. My experience. I saw what I saw with my own eyes and experienced myself. And then the world about all that began to open up to me and how the evil empire works. The intrigue, the behind the scenes things that go on, things that go on. And I could name names, and if I said some names, you'd say, oh, I've heard of that guy. I and gal, or you can't tell if they're guys or gals. A lot of times they have, they're confused on that question, some of them, in the NRA. And that's a big part of the problem also. If you can't be straight on that, how in the world are you going to support what we call God-given, direct-to-the-person rights, responsibilities, such as the responsibility to keep and carry a loaded gun. Thank you, George.
Thank you, Brent. I appreciate that. I learned a lot when we were doing the committee man, and we were doing the job of committee men by bringing in potential candidates and wa-daying them and questioning them on the Constitution and stuff, and talking to these people that were running for Congress and Senate that we brought in. You know, and I heard about stories of what the NRA was doing, you know, and it didn't help my opinion. The live things that I saw going on in the field was just like you. I could see they weren't really working for the people. They were working against us. And I mean, and I had some experiences, as you did, with people who were running for office that the NRA did not do the right thing. I'll tell you that right now. So anyway, I'm glad you can confirm that. So what my experience was not very good. I appreciate that. Okay.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
Okay, we got Ed from Connecticut.
Hey, hi, could you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Yeah, I just, I got on the queue a little while ago, you know, just to, in case something came up by one of the callers that would be something to discuss.
That makes you a Q. You're in the Q. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it's just, you know, we're plugging along over here and trying to do the best we can with, you know, just keeping track of all the things that are happening. And I just appreciate everything NLA is doing. And I'll yield because I don't want to, you know, take up any time if some other people are waiting.
No, actually there's nobody in there after this. I get to go home and go to bed if nobody gets in there.
Right.
Unless you want to hear me pontificate all night. There is a lot of stuff going on right now, you know. It's the pots are certainly bubbling, and you know, it's hard to tell every, you know, all the time, especially since we got a president that likes to play five-tier chess. You try to second guess him, you know what I mean, all the time. Sometimes I wonder what he's doing, and other times I've been proven wrong. So we'll see. It's pretty crazy out there right now. You know what I mean? I mean, especially if you're following it.
Yeah, I mean, it's history making what's happening now. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
That. I mean, look what they're doing. I mean, if somebody openly supports Trump, they call him crazy. So that, but there was 60 million people that voted for Trump. So in other words, there's 60 million people that are crazy. I mean, the other side, you know, they think they have a license to do anything, and I think it's going to backfire on them. It has to backfire eventually on them.
They got the goods on them all, Ed. If Trump ever decides to move the train forward, they're all going to jail. He's just worried about making a constitutional crisis. If he started arresting them tomorrow and everybody that they got stuff on, we'd lose half the Congress and most of the Senate, and all those other people like Hillary and Obama would go straight to jail, and they would claim that he's doing a coup against the American government, the other side. They would scream bloody murder.
Right.
So, look, this is going down. Make no mistake about it. And the only other thing is that the money's going down too, whether you know it or not. We're up for a big reset on the money. Now, how that happens or what Donald Trump has up his sleeve for that, I don't know. But that's a more important issue than anything else on the table, even more important than Korea, because if our money system goes down, all the peace he makes with Korea doesn't mean anything. If the groceries go off our shelves, what are we going to do then? And I'll tell you what we're going to do. How we relate to each other as a community and how we help each other is going to determine how we get through this. But you know, we're very close to a crisis, a money crisis. We're way the debt is so out of whack, and the payments aren't being made, and we're going to default any day, and you're going to see and I've heard they got all the money printed up for hyperinflation, you know, which means, you know, when you go to the store and pay $70 for a loaf of bread, and I don't know how that's going to work out. That won't be very sustainable, you know, and really Trump hasn't had enough time to put the production back in this country. You know, they closed up all our steel factories in Pennsylvania. You don't go in and get those things running overnight. It takes years. You know, even
exactly.
The oil that he opened
exactly.
up in the Prudhoe Bay, up there, it's going to be 3 years before that oil actually hit, it can be pulled, sucked out of the ground. Although
exactly.
I do think they got some they could do a little quicker, but we're almost in the same position that the Soviet Union was in when Putin took over. And when you don't hear this, they go, Russia, Russia, Russia. Let me tell you something. The economic hit went over and raped Russia, and Putin has taken that country from bankruptcy and brought it to where it is today. And Putin, he's a communist, he's this, he's that, baloney. Putin has done more good for Russia and has been a very stable leader. Yeah, I'm a communist. Okay, look at, you know, Obama and Hillary, I'd take Putin any day over those devils, okay? Because they're demonic. They worship the dark forces, believe me. They sacrifice to them. We know they do. And Putin, at least, is claiming to be a Christian, which is no communist leader could ever be a Christian and survive. So there's major stuff going on in the world right now. That's apocalyptic stuff, whether you know it or not. So it's time to wake up and smell the coffee, folks, because big things are coming, and I hope you're ready. Everybody better get right with God, that's for sure. Anyway,
exactly,
and I just didn't want
yeah.
such a rant, but...
But, no, I mean, this is, like I said, this is unbelievable. I mean, even for Trump to be in there, it's really a miracle that he,
yes.
he got in.
Yep.
It just
And you know what? I don't think it's going to stop, because why would God give us a miracle to make it fall short? They're going to pay.
Yeah.
If nothing else, there's judgment coming for them, and they're going to be running. Look at, they're running for like rats from a sinking ship. Did you see the resignation papers? You know, speaking about going on Qiniverse and Q and all that, and these alternative news sites, that's where I get my news. Look up the resignation papers. Go on YouTube and put in the resignation papers and look at how many people have left corporations, have stepped down and vacated. I mean, one company, the whole board of directors is gone. And it's companies you don't even know what the heck they're doing. It's like Domino's Pizza. What do they got to do with it? Well, maybe it's Pizzagate. I don't know. But it's like what they are is they're connected to the companies with the Clinton Foundation that Donald Trump wrote that executive order that said if they aided or abetted or gave anything, those tentacles go deep, deep, deep into our economy and into our society and into the church and everywhere. This is a shakeup. This is a shakeup whose time has come. I mean, I'm talking from the Vatican all the way to the shores of California, which, as far as I'm concerned, it could fall into the sea to one part of it, and all those people, all those funny people could go with it, and they could play with the fish. But this is what you're seeing is the wrath of God on a country that has lost its morality. You know, we've let them get into our schools. We've lost, you know, how many generations of children don't even know. And, you know, whose fault is that? That's our fault. That's my fault. That's your fault. Because,
right.
Well, my kids know because I taught them. And shame on them if they don't listen to me. You know, I've been labeled a nut for years because I rant like this, you know. I mean, I knew about the CFR, the Trilateral Commission. You know who taught me that? My mother. And I'm 61 years old, you know? So this information has been out there. It's just that the mainstream media never let it out. If it wasn't for the internet, we would have been done already. We would have been gone. The only thing that saved us was the knowledge of the internet that people could actually go out. And let me tell you what. Everything I'm talking about, and I'm not talking about, I'm telling you I could make your hair curl. All the evidence is public knowledge. These guys put papers out. They don't hide them. It's like they're bragging. If you want to go do research and pull papers out, I mean, that's what the people that I subscribe to do. They show me. They don't just make claims. They show their resources, you know. There's a guy out there who's got a YouTube channel. And he always puts in his resources on the bottom of where he got the information. And I can't, and I'm having a senior moment. I can't think of the name of the channel. Good guy though. I mean, and his
right, but that's
YouTube
but that's
darn
the
more
point.
Than 6-10 minutes. That's it. Boom, boom. You know.
Yeah, but it's the point that you're making that he's backing everything up. And, of course, what you were saying before is right on point. It is our fault, you know, letting it get to this point. But I think it's just like anything else. I mean, the people are starting to see, like you say, with the internet, all the organizations. Now, I read somewhere that in 2006 there was about 100 patriot groups. And now there's over 1,000. So
and there's more than that. They're not telling us everything. They're not.
Right. But it just goes to show you, you know, where we've come in the last 10 to 12 years. Is that people, you know, whenever you speak to people that have a little bit of age on them, they know what's going on. And they just tonight I spoke to someone at the store. And she was telling me, you know, how it's just not the way it was. And you know, we have to pass that on. Everything has to be passed on. We don't want it to be lost. And so at least, you know, there's many, many people. And just like I said, what happened on that election, I mean, the backbone of America came true, you know, came through for Trump. Now look what happened. He did a speech in Washington, Michigan, was it just a few days ago Saturday night?
Yep, that was in Washington, Michigan. Yep.
Yeah, and he was just amazing. His confidence is there. The people were going wild. Now imagine the stadium is filled. The people were outside. You know, he could have used something, you know, double, triple the size. And remember, when Hillary was going around on her rallies, there was hardly anybody there, and she had celebrities Now, he just went there with no one, just himself. He came right here to Connecticut, and the place was – he came on one of the hottest days of the year on a Saturday night, and he said, you – he appreciated the people. He said, you're here on 100 degrees on a Saturday night, and you're here to see me rather than anything else. And the people, like I said, were all over, you know, overcrowded people. It was amazing. And this is all over the country. But it shows that people have spoken and, you know, on what is really correct. And these
well,
are real
great people. His approval, the polls are saying that he's at 61%. Gone up.
Approval rating. Yeah, approval rating. That's great. And also I do notice they have, for the first time in who could ever remember, the black community behind Trump. There's even posters, blacks for Trump. Then you have posters, women for Trump. I mean, these are fantastic people there at that rally, hardworking people, and they see, you know, what he's done already and imagine what he's going to do in another, you know, he's got another 2.5+ years to go.
Yeah, if they don't assassinate him, they've been working on that too, you know.
I know, I do worry about that, but
well, we should all be praying for him. I mean, he's pretty smart, and he's got his own security detail, but that doesn't mean, you know, look at he's going up against the powers and principalities, the most powerful, the richest and most powerful people in the world is who he's fighting. He's not fighting Obama and Hillary. They're just puppets. They're high in the puppet master thing, but they have direct contact with the reptilian shape-shifting Rothschilds and Rockefellers and all them that are the ones that really run this show, you know, and that's who he's going after. He's because it does no good to put Obama and Hillary in jail. Yeah, I mean, it's an example to all the other minions out there. But fact of the matter is, if we don't get rid of those people like George Soros and Lord Rothschild, if he doesn't go to jail, And we can't make an example out of them and do what needs to happen to them, then it would only come back again anyway, you know. So
yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
It's the kind of thing that's happening right now. People have to say to themselves, what kind of country do you want to live in? What kind of country do you want for your children? And this way, you know, do we want a country that like so many people, like there's corruption in every single area of our country, in the private industry and in the government? Because that's what it is. You know, people think, oh, the government's corrupt. But it's because they come from the people. Those same people are the ones that if they were in the private sector, they would be doing the same thing. And that's what happens. The most beautiful people and personable people are there in the company, and they're stealing from the company.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that people have to realize. It's all over. That's why look at the stores. They have the people that are working. They have as many cameras in the back as they have in the front.
Yeah.
These are staff. This is people working for the company at every single level. And that's what we have to realize. What kind of people do we want to be?
Yeah.
And sure, you get like an immediate short-term gain by doing whatever they're doing. But in the long run, you know, their children are seeing that, and then they're just going to do the same thing.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a matter of us, you know, taking a stand on how we behave, and that would then be a reflection for everyone to see. And it's not worth it. You see, it's almost like, sure, you could have this gain, but it's what it represents.
So in other words, it's such a high level of it of you know, 'cause it's not worth it for the destructions that it does to everyone around, and that's maybe a way of looking at it that way.
Yeah. Listen. Evil doesn't have to go after the people that are already doing its will, and that's what happens. I was in politics, and I saw that the people on the lower end won't be any better than the guys up top. The guys up top set the bar. If they're robbing and stealing up top, it all rolls downhill. They all take a piece, you know. In the municipalities, you know, I worked in school systems and I worked in government, different government jobs I had for a while before I went in the private sector. And let me tell you, and they're all the same. I don't care where you go. They're all pretty much the same, at least in the Northeast here. I can't speak for down south or out west, but I suspect they're all the same because they got this, they have all these same programs that are running through the schools. But it was like the top guy stole the most. He stole hundreds of thousands of dollars. He played around with the money. He got grants. They funded my salary through a grant, and then he wrote a check, and then he put the money in for my salary, and that disappeared. Well, he got a grant under manpower. I'll tell you what, the stuff that they do is unbelievable. And then you go right down the ladder, and each guy, each supervisor of each department, depending on what was going on, he'd get his piece. And then, of course, you know, when I was working there, it was like they'd be shoving nuts and bolts in your pockets just to make sure you took something home, because there's a pecking order of thievery, and they expect you to take something because they can't have you having a higher standard than them. So they're always pushing stuff on you. I mean, the top guy in maintenance or transportation or whatever, he's taking home machinery, tractors, this, that, you know. The lower guys, they're taking home mops and buckets and soap and toilet paper. You wonder why your taxes are so high, you know.
That
comes from the top, because the guys on the top are stealing the most. And the other guys that are lower, they don't even have to tell them what to do as far as the corruption that they do to support him on the top. You know what I mean? Because they'll never blow the whistle on him because they're all on the take. And that gives that guy a firm foundation to stand on when everybody else below him is corrupt. And right away, they have an instinct of what the top guy wants them to do. He doesn't even have to open his mouth to protect himself. They protect him for him. I've seen it because they know. They instinctively know what they need to do to perpetuate the system. They don't even realize what they're in it. And John's, there's a show about a cop that turned bad, and he was taking this and that, and eventually he realized, I'm a criminal. It happened so gradually, he didn't, by the time he stood back and looked at the whole thing, he realized that he was one of the guys that when he was a young cop that he went in to fight. And that's what happens through gradualism. So, you know, we got a big system to clean up. It's not going to be easy. But, you know.
Exactly. You know, when you mentioned about at the corporate level and with the top people, you know, taking and everybody taking, it reminded me of Serpico. They wanted him to take, and he wouldn't take. And then I remember, like, one of the scenes they had it where they all met in a park, and he wouldn't take anything. They said, all right, we'll just split his share. But still, even doing that, they were nervous, and that's why they set him up.
Yeah.
You see, so that's the thing. It's like you were saying, everyone has to take it at that level. And in this case, he wouldn't take. And that's when, you know, they did what they did.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, it's so rampant that it's almost like people know it. It's just not spoke about. And it's being really kept from the children, you know, just trying to keep all that stuff away. But then they hit a certain age, and then they see what's happening.
Right.
You know, I remember I had people, young people, 17, 18-year-olds working for the company, and they knew, like, the whole judicial system was the way it was. You know, so they really, with the Internet and so forth, you know, they're really in tune to what's happening. I was surprised, you know, speaking to people of that age, that how much they knew of what's happening.
Well, look at, there is a great awakening going on, most definitely. And I want to bring a couple other things up about that thing. I mean, I know people that are running their news services on YouTube, and they're young men and young women. They're in their 20s, 22, 23, 24, and I can't believe how good they are and how strong and how what patriots they are. And the one guy says, 4 years ago, I was a socialist. I was a communist when I came out of college, you know? And he woke up. Why did he wake up? Because it's like out of the mouth of babes, you know. They see something and they're like, wait a minute, there's a discrepancy here. Something's not right. And they're not stupid, you know. And like you said, the Internet was a place you could go. And, you know, when you got Walter Cronkite or Dan Rather on there going, oh, and this and that and this and the other, and telling you what you should think about the news, and what he's really doing is giving you a bunch of BS, you know, the next day there's not a bunch of comments in the comment section going, hey, Dan Rather, Walter Cronkite, you're full of BS because such and such. But on the Internet that happens, doesn't it? You know, and then right. And then they'll sit there and you hear them. They go, well, you know, there's a lot of misinformation on the Internet. Well, yeah, there's a lot more misinformation on the Mockingbird News because nobody gets to respond to your baloney, you know. Look at Ed. Let me bring Felicia. Don't go away because
sure.
At nobody else is in the queue. I don't want to let Felicia wait anymore. So don't go away.
Sure.
We got some time. It's only 11:30. So I'm gonna open Felicia up and let her talk. She waits so patiently, and I want to hear what's going on with Felicia.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. I have a couple of questions. One, when I first started in L.A., money was being taken out of my account, and then I had lost my card, and I changed cards, and I put all the information in on the website, and I was told that it wasn't being taken out and that the system needs to be updated, and I still don't think it's being taken out.
Well, you're going to have to talk to Jan or John or Jan. I don't have nothing to do with any of that. I couldn't help you with it, but I will. I can help you, actually, because I can send the message over, okay? So
okay.
I'm not saying I can't help you. I just can't do it myself, okay?
Right, because it's been months since I changed it. And I did talk to Jim and Mr. Jan, they said it was being updated, but I don't think it's being taken out because I can't really see anything. I can't even finish my constitution course on my phone.
Well, I guess we could make sure that it's coming out if that's what you want. You're an inspiration, you know. You get kicked out of your house and you're still giving money. We try to, you know, get people to give $5 a month to keep us floating here. And you're truly a patriot. What's that?
I upped it to $20.
No, you're such a my goodness, you make me cry over here. And God bless you, Felicia, because you know it's funny how those that have the least give the most. What's up with that? You know, it's like
I
look at $20 for some people is a lot more than $20 for other people. You know what I mean? And it's funny,
okay.
The people that have $20 bills falling out of their pockets don't think to give, you know. But you value that money, and you give it because it says something about your value. And look at, don't give up hope. I know that you're on a tough stretch right now, but you know we're very close to breaking this thing open. Even though we've discovered, we went into federal court, not only for that, we went in for the gun case. And every one of those cases, we learn something new about what they're doing to us and why, and we fix it. And pretty soon they have no place to turn. These latest writs of error that just went out on this case, on the gun case that we filed in New York in the court, what's going on in that case affects our other case. It affects your case that's in there because they're pulling the same baloney no matter what, and we're learning all their little tricks, you know?
Right.
Well,
I want to move it into a federal court here because it's just like
it's
been a year. Yeah, I need help with that because I don't know how to do that.
Yeah,
really,
well, you know, I think you could do it. You're going to need somebody to help you as far – well, John's supposed to be working on a guide, but that's going to be a little while before he gets it out. He's got to finish writing that book of his, and it's going to be in there because you'll be able to take and go through that and do it. I mean, right now, I think you could do it with a little bit of help from somebody as far as looking at some of our federal cases and using our footnotes and stuff. It's the same. Look at it. It's all the same stuff. It doesn't really change that much from person to person. It's a violation of your due process, and there's nothing new under the sun. We're using Supreme Court and our forefathers' words. That's what's in there. There's not too much of our own words in there. You know, like Brent says, those who don't quote will never be quoted. We quote them all the time because they've already – look, this battle has already been fought. You know, if you learned all the quotes of our forefathers and you went out and used them in your everyday – dealings with people, they think that you're the smartest person in the world because most of them don't know where them quotes came from. They'll think you thought about, you know.
Well, I mean, the courts, the sheriff's office and the courts, they thought it was fake document. They couldn't understand it. And some officers was like, how do you get in contact with these people? How do you know these people? And I just smiled at them.
you tell them we meet at night in a field, you know. And we dress up in black robes.
No, because...
Oh, wait a minute. No, that's the judges that dress up in black robes, isn't it?
That's the Bohemian Grove stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I know about that.
Yeah. Where do you meet these people? Well, I say, I don't know. They've had the FBI in their houses numerous times. Fake documents, huh? What, those words aren't English? They're fake?
Yeah, they said that it was fake document.
So what makes it real? Does it have to have a lawyer's imprimatur on it to make it real? I don't know.
I just don't like the fact that I'm homeless and somebody's living in my house.
Well, I don't look at. I don't like this. Every time you say it.
I really don't. And I had to tell my neighbors. I rode by there. I had to tell my neighbors to tell them to water my grass. Because they're going to have 24 hours to get out. They're not going to have any time to get out.
Yeah. Well, I hopefully, you know, in the next couple of weeks, you know, once we get these cases moving through the federal court. But you really need to file your own case because look at the master case we have with everybody's affidavits in it. It helps you, but it's a repository. It's really not a case that
seems
we're
like
doing.
They're ignoring it.
Of course they are. You know, they don't want to answer this stuff. First of all, they can't answer it. When we were putting papers in the court, they were putting them in the miscellaneous file. You know why they do that? Because
nobody
knows they're there. They might as well put them in the garbage can. That miscellaneous file, nobody checks that. You know. I mean, we don't know where to file them. We'll put them under miscellaneous. That's like the papers you sweep up off the floor at night and put in the trash can, you know, miscellaneous file. So, but there's ways around it, you know, of stopping that. And we got NLA members that are working on that. I work with a couple of them. I'm not going to mention any names, but figured out how to get those papers out of that miscellaneous file and back onto the clerk's records, you know, public record. And I think it was an ingenious, through affidavit, was an ingenious method that, you know, it forced the clerk to put his papers in the public record. So, you know, we're learning stuff every day, and we're going to prevail at some point. We're going to prevail, and you're going to prevail because you got the tenacity to stick with it, you know, and
well,
that's what it takes, you know.
It's been a year since almost a year since I filed my first papers with the grand jury, and it's like most of the cops that came to my house, they put me out. I don't even see them anymore.
Yeah, right. They've moved on, huh?
Well, they used to come to my job every day. It's where the local cops used to hang out, and they knew me. So the ones that used to come there, they don't even come to the store anymore.
Because they're ashamed of themselves.
What about that that other website you guys mentioned about liability, personal liability?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we had a meeting with them. It's called Notice of Liability. That's also something that you could pursue. You'd have to. I don't know who you'd send it to. I don't know what your personal situation was with that house. If you were fighting a bank, or you're fighting taxes, or what?
It was the bank.
What guys? It was the bank. Yeah. So there's certain things that you have to do with the bank. You know,
yeah, they never gave me a loan. He never gave me a loan. Somebody pocketed the money.
They never gave me a loan.
No, sir. Nope. And the, what did you say? On the paperwork, it said that this was not a loan.
Was this a bank or was this a mortgage company?
It was a bank. It
like,
was
like,
like
a First National Bank of such and such or something. Put their name out there, Felicia, because we'll put some pressure. Don't ever go to this bank.
National City Bank.
National City Bank. Out of where?
It was here in Florida. Uh-huh. And they changed their name to something else.
They're probably bankrupt. They probably sold it 6 times since you've been with them.
No, just once. And I know the name is on, the top of my head.
That's how they cover their tracks, you know. They keep
I actually called them and asked them for the official paperwork, and they was like, we can't find it, and I had to give them my information. They actually sent me the official document. Even though I still have them, I had them send them to me, too.
Let me ask you something. Did you ask them to see a signed wedding contract of the loan they gave you and the money you received?
No, sir, I didn't.
Well, you know, where's the contract?
Yeah, I don't know all this stuff.
See, they got to supply the contract. And if they didn't do that, then they didn't have it. I mean,
I have a contract. Saying that I was supposed to pay back a certain amount of money a month, and that money kept changing, the amount kept changing, and the principal and interest, but I do have the paperwork that's saying that it wasn't a loan.
Well, what was it? I mean, what, you purchased a home from a bank or from somebody, a private person or what?
No, it was National City Mortgage.
Yeah, but National City Mortgage claims they gave you a mortgage, claims they mortgaged that house, right?
Right, but so then Fannie Mae came into play.
Who did you buy that house from?
I bought it from
private person?
No, I had it built.
But you had it built?
Yes, they're going out of business now. Oh, what's their name?
No wonder you're so heartbroken. You actually built this house and they took it away from you.
I built this house from dirt.
Goodness. And so you had, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac had so many problems. You probably fell between the cracks of what your remedy was there, because they were corrupt. They put a lot of people in the street corruptly. And you need like what they call a forensic audit on that whole thing. That's what you need. And there's not too many people that do them, you know what I mean? There was a guy, we had a lady that had a guy that was working, got grant money from the federal government to go and fix these things. You know, when Obama came in, he was supposed to fix all that stuff, and he made it worse.
Well, I have letters from Obama, because I contacted CFPB, and he requested to them that they look into it, and they closed all the cases except for one, and that was the one where they was taking money out of my checking account and still put me in foreclosure for 3 years. That's the only one that's still open.
Yeah, your case is a little convoluted there, but they still got to produce an original contract, which I guarantee you they don't have when they're producing.
Well, I have the original contract.
What's your signature and the bank signature on for the loan?
Not the bank signature. Bank signature isn't on it.
Well, who do you have paperwork with?
National City Bank.
National City Bank basically gave you a construction loan, is what you're telling me.
Well, I had to put $10,000 down before they even start building.
Right. So you put money down, and then they usually what they do is they give it to you in pieces so that you don't run off with the money. So, you know, you get a third of it done, then you go in, they give you a little bit more, and you get more.
They never
done.
Gave me any money.
They didn't give you any money?
Not a dime.
Well, how did you build?
Listen.
I don't know.
It's all fraud. But I have all the paperwork, and this is what it's something.
Yes, say no more. Anyway, I'll have to talk to you. I don't know. I can imagine. Anyway, we got.
But I'll yield.
Okay, thank you, Felicia. Thank you very much.
Okay, good night.
Okay. Don't go away, Ed. I don't know how much time we got, but I got Heather from Utah here. I'm going to open up.
Yeah. I was just wondering, because I heard you talking to Alicia. When they started threatening to take my house away, that's the first thing I did, is ask them to see the contract, the original documents with the signatures on it. And I also asked them for a payoff amount. And they pretty much ignored me and put me off for a year. And even when it came right down to taking my house to the public auction or whatever they did, they still would not give me any of those documents. So I've asked them for it, and they went ahead and sold my house anyways. They threatened to kick me out, 2 weeks notice, 2 weeks notice, 3 days notice, and I'm still in my house as of right now. So I don't know when and if they'll ever come and actually move me out. But I don't, and I have done all my paperwork with you guys on the foreclosure. But when you were telling her to ask for the contract, now if I have asked for a contract and I still don't get it, where do I go from here?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, yeah, I don't hear.
Yeah, Gerard went away. Can you hear me? Looks like I'm on
there. Yeah.
Gerard lost his connection somehow.
Well, I'm over there talking, and I got myself muted.
Okay.
Just saved that breath for breathing. I'm sorry. What I said was you demand those papers through discovery, and you put the demand in the court, and they have to give them to you. And if they default, then you give them a default, and eventually you sue them in federal court. But believe me, they're not going to just forget about it. If you don't do something in so many months, you know, if you're sitting on your hands thinking they forgot, they didn't forget. They're just waiting for the time to run out where they can make a move on you and you can't do anything back to them. So when you say you asked them for the papers, you got to put in an official court document on that docket number that they're taking your house away with.
Look, we never went to court. I don't have a docket number.
What's that?
And I did demand it from the CEO of the Banker of Rural Development, and the people that were writing me, I told them, I demanded they cease and desist what they were doing. I demanded to have those documents. I demanded a payoff, demanded to know what was going on. And it kind of gave me the runaround. We never went to court. There's not a docket number or judge, anything like that.
You're asking the CEO. He's not going to give it to you. Well, he has no intention or incentive to give it to you. You have to put a paper in court and send them a demand. You have to say you need to produce these papers, admit or deny, you know what I mean? And they have to answer that. And if they don't, they're in default. And they got so many days to answer it, that's it. And then when they don't answer it, you file a default. The judge has no choice. Look, if there's no contract, there's no cause of action. And
I bought the land separate from the house, and they took the land also, and that was mine. They only gave me the loan for the house, or supposedly gave me the loan for the house. The land was mine, and they've taken all of it.
Yeah, well, that's a tough one because it's hard for them to separate the mortgage from the deed. Basically, is what you're saying. You know, they got a loan on the house. And if you don't pay the loan on the house, they're going to come in and foreclose the house. But how are they going to take the house and not take the land? And so I know that there's language in there that allows them to do that when you take that first loan out. They're not going to give you money without having it secured somehow. And part of the securitization is the house and the land. You read the fine print and you'll find out that even though you don't think it's separated, it's really not, that thing brings them together, mm-hmm. the liability. So I don't know where you're at with that, right. But, you know, most of the time, especially if they sold the mortgage and stuff, most of the time that paperwork, they're very lax on it following through, you know. So you own the land free and clear?
No, I think, like you said, in the fine print, I think it was put up as collateral for the loan on the house.
Right. So now, they want to foreclose the loan, right?
Yeah. And they did. They foreclosed and they went to auction. They sold my house.
Oh, they sold your house.
They just haven't got me out yet. I'm still sitting in my house. What was that?
When was the sale? Yeah, when was the sale?
It was January 29th.
Did they approve the sale in court yet? Because they have to
approve it. They haven't gone to court. They just did it on the steps of the courthouse, the public auction, and then nobody showed up, so it went back to rural development. There was not a judge.
So they're holding her house, Ed. They still have it.
They told me to move in 2 weeks and give me another 2 weeks notice. And I got a 3-day notice on my door.
Rural development probably transferred your deed into their name. That's what they do. They did an illegal transfer. And so they own it and they're holding it. And that all those rural development companies and all these super funds and all this crap, they're all corrupt, every one of them. It's horrible what they do. They all steal the money. So, they didn't actually sell the house to somebody, but they own it because they took the deed over. And at some point, they'll either sell it to somebody else, and then they'll send their henchmen in to get you out of there with their baseball bats or something, or whatever they're going to do, you know what I mean? You'd have to go recover your deed somehow. You'd have to prove that, You know, I mean, they never, you asked them before they actually foreclosed, you wanted the documentation, and they didn't produce it.
Yeah, almost 2 years ago, I started asking for it.
What's that?
Almost 2 years ago, I started asking for it. When they first wanted to start the foreclosure, I said, give me the payoff amount and a contract. And I didn't hear enough for a year. And then they started talking last March, sending me the whole stuff in the mail. But they would never respond to anything that I – they sent me papers, but they were never what I asked for. And I kept telling them things from paperwork. This is not what I asked you to provide. And they never did. They just kept, you know, give me the runaround, clear it right up until the day they – adoption.
Well, how did you ask for it? Did you send them mail, registered mail, certified mail?
I sent them certified mail.
So you have certified mail that you asked them for it, so you have proof that they got that, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, so
you know, they have a different person write me back, and they kept changing offices, but I sent it to every single office every single time.
Hey, it would have been much better had you put those demands in discovery in the court, and then when they didn't answer, they'll default and you go after them for the default. If the judge or the court doesn't want to do the default, then you do it in federal court, and put your show cause in, and the federal judge will make them do it if they defaulted you and didn't answer in a timely manner, which they didn't answer at all, so they were defaulted. But they're not defaulted because you didn't send it in a way that they consider a legal process, a summons or a discovery order or whatever, moving papers in the court. I mean, you could still do it. It's just harder when you got to open a case up that's kind of laying cold. It makes it harder, but in some cases you might even be better, because the longer they sit on that stuff, the more they're going to lose. They're going to lose documents. They won't be able to produce anything. So you got to sue them. You got to say, look, you took my house unlawfully. You didn't show proof of any kind of contract, and I'm demanding that contract now because the sale is invalid. The transfer of the deed is fraud. Because I asked you these things, I asked them in registered letter. Here's the letters, and open the case back up, and give them 30 days to answer you. And then when they don't answer you, then you default them.
Yeah,
it's actually a simple process.
Well, I went in a couple days before the auction and did a revocation of the deed, because they were turned over to their name, and they were, of course, listed as a beneficiary, and were supposedly, I was warranty deed, and then I fill out the, whoever it goes to, and I went and I revoked that, so then they weren't even labeled as the beneficiaries anymore, and they still went in and took it the next week.
Yeah.
And that's with the county recorder. I had that recorded. Yeah, I found out they don't really care.
That's what Crystal's kind of doing. But, the thing is you got to be in a court of law, and you got to hold their feet to the fire, because nobody's watching what you're doing. What you're doing is kind of outside of the court. You know what I mean? It's extrajudicial or whatever. You got to put it in the court. You got to document, and file the papers in the court and make the fraud claim and sue them, and they're not going to answer you. Their chances are they're going to default. File the default, and then you could take it to federal court on due process violations. But look, it's after midnight. We got to go. It's been good. Thank you, Ed. Enjoyed it. And thank you, Felicia, and everybody else. And we'll see you here next time. Same bat station, same bat time. Batman and Robin, me and Ed. No. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Gerard.
God bless. And say your prayers. Pray for Trump. He needs it. Pray for the country. You won't need a house to live in by the time they get done with us. We gotta save the country. Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great night.